disgustingly racist in public, do this job for a living, and the temptation is to think, what's the question? What's the debate? Of course, what you have to recognise when things are really going south is that some things are not debatable. Expressing horror at the sight of black or brown faces, whether they're in television advertisements on the streets of Handsworth or behind the tills at Tesco, is not something you debate. So how do you talk about it?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a report has blamed Home Office mismanagement for a chaotic and expensive asylum accommodation system. It says the government must set out a clear strategy to avoid squandering billions of pounds more of taxpayers' money. Ministers have promised to end the use of hotels to house asylum seekers by 2029. Dame Karen Bradley is chair of the Home Affairs Committee.
The sheer numbers are much higher than anyone thought, but there has undoubtedly been a lack of control from officials at the Home Office on these contracts. Contract management has been totally failed.
Ministers are expected to set out details of an independent inquiry into the release of Hadish Kabasu. The asylum seeker, who will now be deported, was freed from jail by mistake last Friday and arrested in North London yesterday morning. Social landlords in England are now required to fix damp and mould issues within strict timescales. They could face court action and compensation orders under Awab's law, named after a two-year-old boy who died. Awab Ishak had a respiratory condition as a result of mould exposure at his home in Rochdale. The Conservative peer Lord Gove was Housing Secretary when the plans were drawn up.
You had the tragic case of a child who was in circumstances that shame the country. There's a big problem with a small proportion of our housing where people are just living in conditions that are completely inappropriate, unsafe, and in this case, lethal.
President Trump has arrived in Japan on the next stop of his tour of Asia. He is due to meet Emperor Naruhito ahead of talks with the new Prime Minister, Sanae Takaichi, tomorrow. The oil and energy firm Petrofac is set to go into administration, putting 2,000 jobs in Scotland at risk. The group says it will continue to trade and is looking at a restructuring or sale options. It follows the termination of a major offshore wind energy contract by the Dutch grid operator. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 6 points at 96.51. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather. Sunny spells and scattered showers for most places, turning drier this afternoon. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good grief. Lord Gove. If you were listening to the same news bulletin as me, but if you could sum up the state of the nation in two words, would any words do the job better than Lord Gove? I heard Luke Trill from the polling company on with Nick earlier talking about how the word most used now by Britons to describe Britain is, wait for it, broken. Hands up if you wrote a best-selling book on how they broke Britain. Michael Gove is the one person I didn't give a chapter to that I should have done. You think about what his fingerprints are on when it comes to the consequences of 14 years of Tory rule. Brexit, of course, behind which he put the full force of his considerable rhetorical ability. You look at the VIP lanes, the cronies, and the state of our schools. Few people carry more cans than Lord Gove. What does it say about a country that gives a peerage to somebody who is a byword for cronyism and I don't know what else, other bad things. We may get onto that a little later in the programme. Wes Streeting has spoken of the despair that sweeps the nation. It's funny how many of the conversations we have come back to the legacy, but you cannot use the legacy, the inheritance, to excuse everything that has been presided over by the heirs. So it'll be an interesting tightrope to walk. Do you? You probably don't. Back in 2017, I wonder how many listeners did we have in 2017? Does anyone know? I mean, it's easy to track, but it was about half of what we've got now, do you think? I don't know. But anyway, it was the beginning of an extraordinary journey that this radio programme and, to an extent, this radio station have been on. So the way that we came to the attention of many, possibly including you, was because, for reasons I still don't fully understand, nobody, or hardly anybody, in the UK media was telling the truth about Brexit. The BBC announced that they would observe a sort of moratorium on it, a sort of internal announcement that we don't talk about anymore, it's over, it's done, it's dusted, and you're sort of thinking, that's very, very odd. I can't remember any other events in the news that the state broadcaster would decide they were no longer going to discuss. Of course, the quicker the madness and the idiocy of that decision became evident, the quicker the people that had championed it and cheerled for it, step forward, Lord Gove, Nigel Farage, Boris Johnson, Jacob Rees-Mogg, Nadine Dorries, various members of this profession, too many to mention, in fact, to insist that we shouldn't be talking about it anymore. But we did. And the evidence, the proof that there was an appetite for it, is best evinced by the fact that all of our clips used to go viral, and, well, I don't know quite what word to use to describe what it turned me into, but rather more people became aware of the time that we spend together every morning than had been previously. But some calls really stick out. I don't really listen back to them. Even my own algorithm doesn't often throw up clips of me, but it does occasionally. I don't think I've listened to this one, unless I've played it to you. For reasons. I don't think I've listened to this one since December of 2017 when it actually occurred. And I want you to reflect upon, well, two things really. In December of 2017, this was shocking. Even on a radio phone-in show, I saw one of the posh racists that essentially populate Nigel Farage's universe trying to claim that that racism is confined to local radio shows or local radio phone-ins or something. Well, that's obviously not true. It's just that perhaps less educated people sometimes are less effective at cloaking their racism in canards and camouflage. But this one, even by the standards of the calls we were taking at the time, this one stopped me in my tracks. And remember, just 3 years previously to this, another appearance on this programme by the aforementioned Nigel Farage had ended with the Sun newspaper calling him racist. Something has happened to our country in the ensuing near decade that is hideous and ugly. And part of the problem is that we keep having debates about it. Oh, is it racist to say that there are too many black people in Handsworth? Is it racist to say that there's too many black people on television? Is it racist? Yes. Yes, it is. And it is disgusting. And the massive majority, if not all of the people that you're referring to, have as much right to be here as the people making the racist comments. But you can't help yourself. Got to have a phone in. Got to have a debate. Got to do it. Got to do it. Do you want to hear Stephen Harrow, December 2017? Okay. And take my word for it that this was responded to at the time with a mixture of derision and horror.
I'll give you an absolute point here. If you went down to my local supermarket, I won't name which one it is, okay?
Yeah.
And one of my sons tried to get a job down, or two of my sons tried to get a job down there in a few years when they were in between university and going into going from college to university. At one point, James, there was 23 tills open, and 22 of them, okay,
yes, mate,
had Indians or Pakistani people.
But we're talking now, about the European Union, Steve.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say, James, is this is where it's all coming from. And when I mentioned this to the manager, okay, the manager said to me, we have to reflect the local community. And the point I'm trying to make, James, and you're trying to, to a degree, defend me, but to attack me, is Is that right, James?
Mate,
is why people have voted out of Europe.
Because we've got too many brown people on the tills in Harrow.
It's not about having too many, but when I was...
What is it then, Steve? Slow down a little bit. If you're not complaining about there being too many brown people, why do you keep talking about the number of brown people in the hospital and the number of brown people in the supermarket?
The reason I'm saying that is, James, is because that is why people voted to leave Europe, because of Great Britain.
I don't disagree with you. No, it's not because of Great Britain losing its identity. It's because people are frightened of brown people.
No, it's not about it. No, James.
What difference does it make to me? Just help me out here, because I can kind of get my... I work on the phones every day, so I have no idea what colour anybody is. Steve, stop talking. Stop talking just for a moment, my friend, all right? Why does it matter to you what colour the person that you buy your milk off is?
Well, it doesn't matter the colour that I buy my milk off, James, but what the point I'm trying to make is why people voted out of Europe.
I'm not arguing with you. They voted out of Europe because they think there's too many brown people in their hometowns.
Is it unfair then, James, to say that when I mentioned what I said about the local supermarket, that...
And the hospital.
When I am told... And the hospital. But let's go to the supermarket. When I am told that we have to reflect the local community, is that not racist, James?
No, Steve. That was a character who voted to leave the European Union because there were too many brown faces behind the tills in what I think was his local Tesco, although I noticed that he was keen to avoid mentioning it. A lot of people reflecting great nostalgia at the idea of there being 23 tills open in any supermarket in this country now instead of the infernal self-service machines. But there it is. Of course, as a direct consequence of the Brexit that Steve voted for, many, many more brown faces made their way to this country to fill the gaps that had been left by all the white people that we told to sling their hook, something that was very expertly covered up and camouflaged during Boris Johnson's premiership. Now, here is a member of Nigel Farage's latest outfit, Reform UK something, on television, kind of, on Saturday. Her name is Sarah Poachin.
I think Stuart's absolutely right. Drives me mad when I see adverts full of black people, full of Asian people, full of, you know, people that basically are anything.
What's wrong
other
with that, Sarah? What's wrong with that?
Well, it doesn't reflect our society, and I feel that you know, your average white person, average white family is like, I agree with you, Stuart, not represented anymore in TV.
There are lots
TV
of white people on television, Sarah. Are there not? There are lots of white people. There are lots of white men. There are lots of white women.
We're talking about adverts, and how many times do you look at a TV advert and you think there's not a single white person on it? And actually it is. It's something that's happened because, I believe, of the woke liberati that goes on inside, you know, this sort of like in the arty-farty world. You know, when it comes to, you know, northern towns like Runcorn that I represent, you know, I mean, it's just not representative of the rest of the country. Might be fine inside the M25, but it's definitely not representative of the rest of the country.
Imagine feeling mad. I'd give her the benefit of the doubt, if you must. I'm not. But, you know, it's live television, something called Talk TV. And the choice of language, you know, is something sometimes spur of the moment. But imagine even having a bee in your bonnet about it. It's extraordinary. It's like Steve complaining to the manager at Tesco about the number of brown faces behind the tills, but absolutely adamant that he's not racist at all. This hideous woman complaining about the number of brown and black faces in television advertisements. In a country where, 30 years ago you'd never see one? No one really seems to have made that point. No one really seems to have made the point that if you have any knowledge at all of how the advertising industry works, the idea that people would be sitting around a table on whatever the British equivalent of Madison Avenue is, and deliberately deciding to sell less product by putting people of colour in their adverts. It is one of the most ruthless and cynical industries on the planet. The attention economy, which in many ways pays my mortgage, is designed to shift as much stuff as is humanly possible. So that's not just a racist comment, it's a comment of unimpeachable stupidity. Of course, racism goes hand in hand with either stupidity or its twin sister, dishonesty, because you can't be a racist if you're honest. It's a blatant lie to believe that the colour of somebody's skin is an indicator of inferiority or superiority. It's not a lie that you're born believing, it's a lie that you're persuaded to believe, perhaps by people like that, or by our party leader Nigel Farage, who, to the best of my knowledge, has he said anything yet? Has he said anything about this yet? A man described by the Sun newspaper as racist in 2014, but who has subsequently said many, many more things that would be even more deserving of that description. The woke liberati. So this idea that you've got somebody selling, what should we say, nappies or cars? What do you prefer? Somebody's selling cars. Say, well, look, we're going to put a black person in the advert. We'd probably sell less cars, but we've got to do it because, hey, we're all in the woke liberati. The woke liberati? The arty fuck? Why do these people hate culture? Including British culture. Why do they hate education? Why do they hate nuance and insight? Is it because it makes them feel scared of how thick they are? I think it probably is, isn't it? Why would you come up with that? How would you feel mad at the sight of people of colour in adverts? Who even counts apart from Steve in Harrow? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cashiers. 6 cashiers. 7, 8, 9 cashiers. 2 black people in an advert. 1 black woman in an advert. 3 mixed race children in an advert. You're thick, you're racist, and you're weird. And I don't know what order to put that in. Personally, as a white man, I exercise my privilege by not putting racist first. Were it my children that she was mad about seeing, or people that looked like me that she was mad about seeing in adverts, I'd probably have less difficulty working out what the hierarchy is. But don't underestimate the power of weird or the power of stupid. It's a hat trick of horrors. Racist, stupid, weird. I feel mad when I see black and brown faces in adverts. I suppose she should be grateful that she wasn't in Handsworth.
You know, I went to Handsworth in Birmingham the other day to do a video on litter. And it was absolutely appalling. It's as close as I've come to a slum in this country. But the other thing that I noticed there was that it was one of the worst integrated places that I've ever been to. In fact, in the hour and a half that I was filming with news there, I didn't see another white face. And that's not the kind of country I want to live in. I want to live in a country where people are properly integrated. It's not about the colour of your skin or your faith. Of course it isn't. But I want people to be living alongside each other, not parallel lives. That's not the right way we want to live as a country.
So yeah, you've got to be integrated and you've got to be living alongside each other, but not in adverts. Okay, when I say integrated, too many of you in adverts, and also, I don't mean getting elected mayor of London 3 times, because that's not a good example of integration either. I didn't see any white faces while I was making a video about litter, says Honest Bob Jenrick. I've seen the video about litter, I didn't see any non-white faces speaking to him on camera. So again, you can't do racist stuff without also being a liar, or being stupid, or both. And Chris Philp, speaking of which, attempted to defend his colleague while attacking the woman who doesn't like seeing black faces on adverts, defending his colleague who doesn't like seeing black faces on the streets of Birmingham. Happily, it was Lewis Goodall that he was trying to justify it to.
It was completely wrong. She's apologised. I think the way she put it was racist. She shouldn't have said it, and it's right she's apologised.
What's the difference between that and what Robert Jenrick said about not seeing any white faces in Handsworth?
Well, I think she put it, she did use different language, and I think it was put in a different
Robert
way.
Robert Jenrick talked about white faces. I mean, what's the difference? Both are expressing an opinion on the lack of white faces in front of them.
Yeah, well, I think they put it differently, and I've been very clear what she said was wrong.
So why is what Sarah Poachin said racist, but what Robert Jenrick said not racist, when they were both talking about the lack of white faces in front of them?
Yeah, they express themselves, as you will, if anyone reads the two relevant quotes, they express themselves in different ways, clearly, they did.
Well, no, they were both saying, Sarah Poachin said that she didn't like it when she saw the adverts were full of black people, full of Asian people, and not having white people,
yeah.
Because she was saying that that was unrepresentative of the country. And that's basically what Robert Jenrick was saying, wasn't it?
No, it's not what Robert Jenrick said, no. No, it's not.
Well, Robert Jenrick said that his metric for integration was not seeing a single white face when he turned up in Handsworth for 90 minutes. Yeah. I'm just asking why counting white faces in one context and counting it in another, how one can be racist and one isn't racist.
Well, Robert Jenrick didn't say that he didn't like it, right? So there's a clear difference between what the two of them said, obviously.
Well, he said it was an example of a failure of integration. It was quite clear what his inference was.
Well, he didn't say that he didn't like it.
He certainly didn't say he liked it. He certainly wasn't treating it as a great triumph, was he?
Look, I think they said clearly the way they expressed themselves were different in those two cases.
He said it was a country he didn't want to live in, so I think we can all conclude, despite Chris Philp's desperate efforts to pretend otherwise, that he didn't like it. So you go into a supermarket, you're horrified by the number of brown faces. You turn on your television, you watch an advert, and you're horrified by the number of brown faces. You go to Handsworth to make a video about litter that features no brown faces, but you're horrified by the fact that you didn't see any white faces, and the number of brown faces discombobulated you. His colleague, Katie Lamb, of course, wants to deport people who've got every right to be here. You have a former presenter, I think, on the station where that dreadful UKIP woman appeared, tweeting, apparently he was hacked, which is a new word for it, tweeting about how he is sick and tired of seeing brown and black faces when he's on public transport in London. You have a Daily Express journalist, again, tweeting about how he thinks that a British politician should be deported because she's brown or Muslim or possibly both. I haven't asked you a question yet, and it's nearly 20 past 10. I'm here. Phone lines are open. I don't need to ask you a question on days like today. I've got some of my own, but I'm also here to let you have your say, respond to what you've just heard, map that decline from Stephen Harrow being ridiculous to a sitting member of our parliament being at least, for my money, probably even more racist. And if they talk like this in public, imagine how they talk in private. Imagine how they talk in private. We know that the founder of UKIP repeatedly described Nigel Farage as having used the N-word. How do you think they talk in private? Jenrick thought he was in private, thought he had a warm, friendly audience, a constituency, conservative constituency party, but someone was recording it. That woman too stupid to realise she was in a television studio. Imagine how they talk in private. Oh, and racist incidents against UK nurses are up by 55%. Anybody wondering why?
This is James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973 LBC.
At Morrison's this spooky season, save 25% off with your More card when you buy six or more bottles of wine or fizz, including champagne. Enjoy faves like 19 Crimes Red, Le Vieux Ferme Rosé, Moët Brut and more. Now that's a beautiful bargain.
Morrison's to shop at Morrison's.
Majority of stores, max 36, exclude Scotland and Morrison's Daily More card app required, 18 plus selected 75 cl bottles. Online varies. Please drink responsibly.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely, do your trip checks. T, drop up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
think. Do the 4-trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
I'm telling you, raise taxes. That's how.
Cut spending. Less waste. More sense.
Move north. Get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
22 minutes after 10 is the time. Let me be completely clear. I can see from my switchboard, people are because we're also conditioned, we're also programmed. You think this is a phone-in about whether or not what she said was racist, about whether or not what Honest Bob Jenrick said was racist, about whether or not Katie Lamb announcing that people with every right to be here are going to be deported for no reason other than being foreign was racist. That is not this phone-in. We don't do phone-ins like that anymore. It's time to change the phone-in format. You cannot have a debate about whether the moon is made of moon. Brexit messed up everything, didn't it? Having debates between blithering idiots and internationally respected experts about what would happen to our economy or our exports. But I'm not doing it with people's lives. Don't ring me to tell me, well, yes, I'm stroking my chin and I think she's definitely right. That is racism. Pure, bigoted and incredibly simple. So was Robert Jenrick's intervention. And so were the two members of my profession that I alluded to earlier. It's base and hideous racism. So the question I do have for you is, if you're not going to debate it, how do you talk about it? In fact, let me rephrase that. If we are not going to debate it, and sadly, I imagine some people who do this for a living still will, without ever quite going far enough down the road of pointing out anybody pretending it isn't racism is probably comfortable with it and is therefore probably racist. Probably is doing a hell of a lot of lifting in that sentence. But if we are not going to debate this because we know what it is as plain as the nose on your face, then how do we talk about it? How do we do it? Question one. Question two, why has this happened? Why has this happened? Some questions are obvious, some perhaps less so. Let me break your heart, if I may. The number of reports by nurses of racist incidents at work has risen by 55% over 3 years. I don't know whether the total number of 1,000 that the Royal College of Nurses Nursing expects to receive this year strikes you as unacceptably high or cause for relief because it's low. But remember, these are the ones that go to the trouble of calling the Royal College. And it cuts both ways. One, told by their manager that they should not have come to the UK while being denied annual leave. Another, told by a colleague, I want to remind you that you're not one of us. Other incidents include a patient and their family repeatedly refusing care from a nurse because they said they didn't want people like that treating them. I wonder if they felt mad when they saw the number of black and brown faces in A&E. I wonder if they don't want to live in a country where they walk into a hospital ward and don't see a single white face in uniform like honest Bob Jenrick and this hideous Sarah What's-It woman. So if we're not going to debate it, how do we talk about it? 0345 6060973. Aoife is in Heaton Mersey. Aoife, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I hope you're well. I'm just disgusted at all this, that what's going on at the moment. It is racist. They are being racist. I mean, Nigel Farage, he's the lady who said all this about, you know, people, she's sick of seeing people, you know, in brown people.
How does that even work? Who watches television counting faces? Who goes to the supermarket and counts faces? It's extraordinary.
I don't understand. I mean, in my family, I'm a Muslim, and in our family, you know, my brother's married to an English lady, my niece and nephew are married to an English, we're very multicultural.
When you say
family.
English, you mean white, I think, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, just clarifying.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
To me, you're English, just for the record.
I am English.
For the avoidance of doubt. Yes, I know.
But the guy from, is he called Zia, who's part of the Reform?
Yeah.
I mean, they're going on about deporting people. Well, maybe he should be deported. Because he's a different colour as well.
Well, he's very rich.
Well, so money talks then.
Yes, but they never mean people with people who are bankrolling political parties are rarely going to be the first in the queue to be punished or deported by political parties. How do we talk about this? Because even you, I notice in the note they've written on my screen, you know, you rang in thinking it was important to stress that what this woman has said is racist. It's not. It's obvious. It's like ringing in to tell me that water is wet or that the cows produce milk. How do we have these conversations? Because as a white man, I don't feel it. I haven't got literally skin in the game to know what it's like to have conversations with my children that I haven't had to have before, or to warn people, or to tell my nurse friend. Not to worry about the person who refused to be treated by her, because like Stephen Harrow, he's got a problem with the colour of her face, not the qualifications that she studied for. How do we have these conversations? Especially when, I hesitate to say it, but I'm sure I'm right, 90% of my profession will be both sidesing it, pretending that it's okay, or quoting spurious and ridiculous statistics about how, no, actually, I think you'll find that there are now lots of black and brown people in adverts. How do we have the conversation?
You know, it's never even come to my mind when you're watching television, why is there a black person there or a white person there or a Chinese person there? I'm ashamed. This is my country. I was born and bred in this country. And I'm ashamed to say, instead of moving forward in this time and age, we are all moving backwards.
Well, we're not all moving backwards. Some of us are screaming furiously from the side of the road about the cars flying past us in reverse gear at 100 miles an hour. There's a horrible story about some of the Windrush survivors today using almost exactly the same language that you've just used to describe the sense of backwards momentum. I don't know where it leads. Do you know where it leads?
I just think it's going to get worse, to be honest, because all these politicians, even people who've never even thought, I mean, I've never thought about it, but they've kind of put it in my head. Now it's going to make me think or make me count. I wonder how many different colour faces have I seen today in these
advertisements. And I suppose some people are going to go, look, brown person, yes, she's got a point. Oh, black person, one, ding, 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 ding. Let's get them off the telly as soon as we possibly, I mean, that may be, I don't know. Some people are saying that it's a dead cat to distract from the humiliation in Caerphilly, but I think that gives far too much credit to these clowns. That is the point, isn't it? It is the normalisation of it. So you can laugh at Stephen Harrow back in 2017. You can applaud, if you must, the Sun newspaper for calling Farage racist back in 2014 because he wanted to choose his neighbours according to their country of origin. But now we're making excuses for it. Of the three or four people that I've mentioned to you this morning, as far as I'm aware, only one of them is in employment jeopardy, either in receipt of his sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap or worried about getting them. And I've got no concrete evidence for that. So the consequences are what we're discussing as well. The absence of consequences create incredibly fertile territory for this sort of bigotry and poison to spread. Do you know, I think it was before. Anyway, I'll tell you in a minute. Thank you, Arifa. Room for plenty more calls. We may stay with this for a bit longer because it has turned out to be one of those mornings where my spleen needed venting. But remember, it is an opportunity for you to do the same as well. Here's Thomas Watts with your headlines.
A highly critical report says the Home Office has squandered billions of pounds of taxpayers' money on asylum hotels. The Home Affairs Committee says the system is failed, chaotic and expensive, with poor oversight of the private companies involved. A cabinet minister says the justice system needs to be rebuilt from the bottom up following the release of Halish Kabatu, the migrant who was serving a 12-month jail sentence for sexual assault, was freed from HMP Chelmsford by mistake on Friday. New rules requiring social landlords in England to investigate and fix dangerous damp and mould have come into force. They will face court action if they fail to improve conditions as part of AWAB's law. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers through the morning, turning dry for most by the afternoon. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie! Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star! Wow!
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 10:33. Have another listen to this abomination and insert, instead of the word adverts, the word hospitals or the words the cabinet or perhaps kindergartens, maybe the England football team, your children's classroom, the streets of Handsworth. Swap the words adverts for any of those, or indeed insert the words the country and tell me what you hear.
I think Stuart's absolutely right. Drives me mad when I see adverts full of black people, full of Asian people, full of, you know, people that basically are anything.
What's wrong with that, Sarah? What's wrong with that?
Well, it doesn't reflect our society, and I feel that, you know, your average white person, average white family is, like, I agree with you, Stuart, not represented anymore in TV.
There are lots of white people on television, Sarah, are there not? There are lots of white people, there are lots of white men, there are lots of white women.
We're talking about adverts, and how many times do you look at a TV advert and you think there's not a single white person on it? And actually it is. It's something that's happened because, I believe, of the woke liberality that goes on inside, you know, this sort of like in the arty-farty world. You know, when it comes to, you know, northern towns like Runcorn that I represent, you know, I mean, it's just not representative of the rest of the country. It might be fine inside the M25, but it's definitely not representative of the rest of the country.
It's probably a failure on my part to not... I mean, I do understand what she's saying, but the way my brain is built, I'm trying to come up with something that's a little bit more nuanced or a little fairer. But I feel mad when I see black and brown people in adverts. What's the difference between feeling mad when you see black and brown people in hospitals, where they are also, of course, overrepresented, if that's a word that means anything to you, or in your children's classroom, or on the streets of Handsworth, or in the England football team, or anywhere? Because these people are not, for her, British enough. And I wonder why that might be. I've got one of the finest ever examples of the history button. Would you like to hear it? So someone's been in touch, and I remember, I explained this isn't a debate, because if you think it's debatable, you are racist. I wouldn't say it was racist as such, James. She was saying that it was not representative of the nation. I've noticed that nearly every advert and even teleprograms have to have black and white couples and mixed-race kids. It's ridiculous. They are pushing it down our throats. What are they pushing down your throats? And if I press the button to see what other messages this person has sent to the program or the radio station, here's one. I'm telling you now, James, if my wife was to vote Labour and not Reform, I would drown her. That's what you're dealing with. That's who you're debating with. 10:36 is the time. Lucy is in Wimbledon. Lucy, what would you like to say?
Okay, hi, James. I am livid at the moment. I'm listening to what you're saying and what that lady, what the play that you just played, what the statement that you just played to us.
Yeah.
And I'm just like so upset. Like my voice is even shaking.
I can hear it.
I feel like when it suits them, black and brown people are amazing. Example. The NHS, when COVID happened, everyone would step out of their household every Thursday and clap for the nurses and doctors.
They would even bang their saucepans. They'd bang their saucepans with wooden spoons, Lucy.
Exactly. So this woman saying that she's seeing adverts of black people and brown people, who are the people that she sees when she calls the doctor?
Maybe that drives
who
her mad
are
as well.
The people?
Maybe that drives her mad as well. Maybe she's one of the people who insists on being treated by members of the healthcare staff who aren't.
To me, I feel like the next few months, if this carries on, we should all immigrants, I'm sorry, but all immigrants should take a pause for 2 weeks. And see if this UK will still be standing.
This isn't about immigrants.
Black people, Indian, I'm saying this
is about British people who aren't the same colour as her.
Actually,
that's the rudest word you're allowed to use, all right? Otherwise I get into trouble, not you.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's important to... I invited but people to vent their spleens.
I am so angry. It's ridiculous because we black people and Asian people contribute so much to this country. The likes of the drivers, TfL, the likes of NHS, the likes of the Chinese and the Indian restaurants, all the businesses, majority is owned by immigrants. And if this country says, if immigrants say we don't want to work for 2 weeks, this country will fall. And this is what Nigel Farage needs to put in his head, that they need us. They need us.
Well, I think that is obviously true. But a lot will acknowledge that, but they don't think that should involve having to treat you as equals.
Exactly.
That's why I've noticed a lot of people saying they'd love to move to Dubai, where you have incredible living arrangements and sort of domestic servitude, almost entirely undertaken by people who are immigrants to Dubai, serving, in the case of the people making these points, including, I think, the partner of one of Farage's top people, if you can use that phrase to describe this shower. That's what they dream of. You should know your place, you see. You shouldn't be an advert. Oh, it's all right for you to deliver
exactly.
my food. But you shouldn't be an advert. You shouldn't have glamorous jobs.
Exactly. Exactly. White people have always been in the advert. We've always looked at them as, oh, they're so beautiful. Now we're seeing that black people and Asian people are now being showcased as beautiful in various adverts. Now that is...
And that is my point. That is absolutely my point. That is the reason why I'm asking how do we talk about this, because I do not want to debate it, and I do not think that we should be debating it. Lucy, stay safe.
At all.
No,
And one more point. One more point, and then I'm gone.
Okay.
If this was said about Jewish people, it would blow up to something else. But when it's about black and Asian people, it's like, oh, get on with it. Slavery was such a long time. No, it was not a long time, because we're still living in it.
Lucy, thank you. Apologies to anybody.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you. My apologies to anybody who was discomforted by her language. You could tell that it was an incredibly impassioned contribution to the programme, and she did edit herself the second time, which I think meant that we didn't need to. 10:40 is the time, and that's one of the answers to the question, how do we talk about this if we refuse to debate it? Of course, this will be probably another lonely outpost in the British media where we acknowledge that there is nothing to debate. Unless, of course, you're dealing with men who will drown their wives in the event of them not voting for the party represented by the woman who was racist on the television this weekend. And on it goes. And I wonder whether I'm engaging in a slightly luxurious listen by wondering about how we should discuss this stuff, because it's not directed at me, it's not directed at my family, it's not directed at my children. But a quick word, if I may, on the stupidity of it all. The idea that advertising the advertising industry would deliberately minimise, would deliberately dilute or reduce the amount of products they can sell in order to pander to a woke liberati, is at odds with capitalism itself, let alone the sort of basic rules of business. And I said something on, I think on Sunday, and I'll read you this, because I didn't know that it was going to happen so quickly. I can't remember what it was that happened immediately afterwards that proved my point for me, but here it is. Off the top of my head, there have been four egregious examples of weapons-grade public racism in the last couple of weeks. Generic, the Express hack, Captain Concrete, and the Reform Woman. The way they are treated by employers, punters, and wider media will directly influence how much more we see. And I'm not expecting any prizes or pats on the back for my prescience on that one. And I apologise to Katie Lamb for missing her off the list when she quite clearly deserves to be on it. But until he got on with Lewis Goodall, the Shadow Home Secretary, good Lord, well, I suppose, Lord Gove, Home Secretary Chris Philp, who knows what's the most ridiculous, Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg, was refusing to say that he thought the Reform MP had been racist for saying she doesn't like seeing black people on television. He even, according to one report, used the phrase legitimate concerns about migration about 10 minutes after I'd pointed out that the way these kind of comments are received and the way these kind of comments are treated will determine how much more racism we are chronicling and some people of colour are enduring tomorrow. 10:43 is the time. Lloyd's in Lewisham. Lloyd, what would you like to say?
I'd just like to say, preface by saying I'm of Afro-Caribbean descent, and I have worked in marketing for quite a while. And if you come to me, this is for the harder thinking, by the way, James.
Yeah.
If you come to me to put a campaign, advertising campaign, I would try to get as many demographics in that advert. So I would have the black and white couple with their mixed race children, with their grandparents and their Asian friends all sitting down to enjoy whatever my product is. So I try to get as many demographics as possible.
I'm going to translate for people not in the industry the word demographics into the word customers. As many different kinds of customers as possible to be represented in an advert that's telling them to go out and buy whatever it is you're hawking.
Exactly. In one advert, that's great. So if you can identify with the people enjoying that product, you might say, well, hang on, I might try that. Much in the same way, bizarrely, as why organizations like Reform try to push some brown people, who are, I think, equally hard thinking, into the debate. So they say, well, look at us. We appeal to that brown man and that woman and whatever. And that is not representative of the people who vote for them, is it?
No, that's a good point. And it's not representative of the demographic that those people come from as well.
Exactly.
You're expressing yourself perfectly well, but there's a sort of spluttering indignation that we even have to talk about this stuff in 2025.
Because I've said this to you before. Unfortunately, we've got people who don't deal in facts. They don't come to their opinions based on fact. They come to their opinions based on emotion. Devoid of facts.
What is feeling mad when you're watching an advert, if not an emotion? And then they try and pretend it's a fact by sort of spouting spurious nonsense about the representation. I don't care what color. I'll tell you what I'd like to see, Lloyd, in more adverts. I'd like to see more bald spots, more man boobs, and more very, very, very pale-skinned men. I don't think we're properly represented in the advertising. Not that handsome, man. Why do I care if I see a man who is more handsome than me driving a fancy car? Why do I care if it's a black man who's more handsome than me or a white man who's more handsome than me? Is it going to influence my decision to buy that car or that tin of mushy peas? It's extraordinary, isn't it? Absolutely extraordinary.
Unfortunately, the people who... Not enough of the harder thinking will listen to your show, unfortunately. There are some, and they, even less of them, will actually hear what I'm saying and understand what I'm saying, because they are very hard of thinking.
Well, and that is the same observation I made. They're not all hard of thinking, but the ones that are not hard of thinking are weapons-grade liars, because if you're going to do a racism, then you're either really, really thick or really, really dishonest, or both. There's no middle ground. The posh people or the better educated people tend to be the most dishonest. And the others, I suppose, more excusably, possibly just don't know any better. And to Lloyd's point about the attempts to sort of, I suppose you'd call it, blackwash parties that promote and disseminate racism, the only black branch chair of Reform UK left the party last week, saying that the tone of Britain's migration debate is doing more harm than good. Make of that what you will. It's 10:47.
This is LBC.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep. where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
10:49 is the time. A couple of callers have mentioned Zia Yusuf, who is the chair, I think, of Farage's outfit. He's no longer, and again, you tell me why this hasn't been more widely reported, he's no longer running their so-called Doge department. You remember they were going to march into loads of councils and save a ton of money. Well, they've currently undertaken precisely zero audits of said councils, and most of them have come out and said, there isn't any money to save, we'll be putting council tax up by 5%. The idea that you improve a bedridden country by going for a leadership that is less competent, more racist and less honest than the one that led it into bed over the course of 14 years is something that makes me despair. But I know I'm not alone. And he is the chap that they wheeled out to defend the racism of Sarah Poaching. As with Lewis Goodall, when it comes to Trevor Phillips on Sky News, they kind of picked the wrong presenter.
How did you feel when you heard that?
Well, I know Sarah very well. I was instrumental in her selection as a candidate, worked very hard to get her elected, and I'm extremely glad that I did. I consider her a close friend, and she's a great MP for Runcorn. She did say those words, and she has apologised, saying that it was a poorly phrased thing to say. But you've got to put that into context. The caller, a gentleman called Stuart, had called in, and I think he was rightfully upset about the massive underrepresentation of some groups in television advertising and significant overrepresentation of others, Trevor. But we have to be able to talk about some
of these. But these are her words.
These are statistics borne out by a Channel 4 study.
She went on to say people are switching off, but there are too many black and Asian people on telly. Is she turning off telly now?
No. Anyone listening to this,
to listen to the whole thing.
Of course not. I know Sarah extremely well. She's a lovely person. She's apologised rightly because it was poorly phrased, as she said. But as I said, Stuart, who called in about underrepresentation of some people on television and overrepresentation of others, I think is a very valid point we must be able to talk about.
All right. Zia Yusuf, thank you for your time this morning. And Sarah, if you're watching, stay with us. Right.
There were no white people in that clip. I don't know if you're familiar with Trevor Phillips, but obviously, as he alluded to when asking how Sarah Poaching would feel about watching a black man interview a brown man on television with no white people to be seen. Would that drive her mad? I don't know. Let's listen to her clip again, shall we, just to establish exactly what it is that drives her mad.
Right. Drives me mad when I see adverts full of black people, full of Asian people, full of, you know, people that basically are
What's wrong with that?
Well, it doesn't reflect our society, and I feel that you know, your average white person, average white family is like, I agree with you, Stuart, not represented anymore in
TV. There are lots of white people on television, Sarah, are there not? There are lots of white people, there are lots of white men, there are lots of white women.
We're talking about adverts, and how many times do you look at a TV advert and you think there's not a single white person on it? And actually it is. It's something that's happened because, I believe, of the woke liberati that goes on inside, you know, this sort of like in the arty-farty world. You know, when it comes to, you know, northern towns like Runcorn that I represent, you know, I mean, it's just not representative of the rest of the country. Might be fine inside the M25, but but it's definitely not representative of the rest of the country.
I mean, not to be too controversial, but I'm a little bit tired of the financial epicentre of this country. The taxes that come out of London essentially keep the entire islands afloat, being maligned in this way by people who think that everyone else is counting the number of brown and black faces that they see on their television screens. I suppose her defence would be, oh no, I don't mind them on the news, I just don't like them in the adverts. Extraordinary, and no closer really, because I think people wanted to get their feelings off their chest before getting stuck into the thinking about how we conduct these conversations. How do you do this? How many people will be actually debating this as opposed to simply describing it as utterly unacceptable? Badenoch has not done anything about Jenrick's racism. Farage has not done anything about Pochin's racism except wheel out Zia Yusuf, who's the hokey-cokey of Reform UK politicians. He put 1 minute he's in, 1 minute he's out, 1 minute he's in again, 1 minute he's out again. He left the party, came back 2 days later, they made him head of Doge, he's left that now. It's just extraordinary. But there it is, and that is the country that we are currently living in. And apart from, I think, one member of the media who may have been handed his sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap, the journalist on the Daily Express who called for Zara Sultana to be deported because she's brown, or Muslim, or both. She's as British as he is, if indeed he is British, I don't know. I've never heard of him before, to my embarrassment, although I was supremely unsurprised to find out that he used to work for a far-right hate site. I don't know. It's the short answer to how to conduct these conversations. You can't come on every single, or can we come on every single morning? And actually just call it out, because not enough people are. Jordan's in Royston. Jordan, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I was obviously listening to what you've been saying, and one of your old phrases popped into my head. One of them was, you can't reason yourself out of a position you didn't reason yourself into.
Yeah, that's true.
And the other one was the one you said earlier. And it's just gone out of my head because of the nerves.
Of course, that's fine.
So the point I was making to your researcher is I actually referenced how Japan has those earthquakes offshore and the tsunami comes in, and that's what this kind of feels like. I've always had the mindset that the discomfort about foreigners or brown people or black people has been under the surface for many, many years. I grew up in Hertfordshire in the 90s. It was similar then. It was less overt because on the surface, everyone's very polite. And then as soon as it gets to, you know, 13-year-old me with my hoodie walking through the streets, suddenly everyone wants to cross the road because I'm a tall black guy.
Sure.
So this has been my experience from jump. And now it just feels like, especially post-Brexit, sorry to bring that up so early.
You can't apologize for that.
Well, you say that, And that it feels like the permission to do this has become the standard. And what really upsets me is, I mean, you know, not to point fingers at you directly as such, but even in the clip where you were speaking to this gentleman in 2017, I say gentleman, I'm being too polite. Even then, it was you were referencing him as a person who you were respectfully talking to when he was overtly being racist to you.
You think I should have gone in harder? I mean, I have done on occasion.
You should have gone in harder because you can't go harder than every single one. Otherwise, all you get is frustrated.
They don't ring me anymore, sadly. They just clip me up and abuse me on social media.
because they can't actually challenge your position because, as you've said, you're either a liar or an idiot, and you are
either. Or both, Jordan. Don't forget both.
And this is the problem we've got now. The liars and the idiots and the both are in a position of power, whether we like it or not. The Labour government isn't shouting loudly about this when they probably should be.
Wes Streeting's gone in pretty hard. And, you know, there'll be a view that we don't all have to. Wes Streeting is an extremely senior member of the government, and he was under no illusions whatsoever about the base racism that this hideous woman engaged in.
But he was talking to the media, I assume, and that same media would give that lady a platform to speak freely and not as challenged as I would like to see.
No, I hear you.
And this is the problem we're always going to have. If it's presented in a way that sounds normal, then it will continue to be normal in the eyes of the public. So the danger to people like myself, you know, I've got a video on my phone from years ago when I used to work at a hotel that are of two people standing in front of me with, abusing me. Mm. And, you know, what was the reaction of the police, do you imagine? We've moved them along. Are you okay with that? Yeah. You know, it's easy to dismiss unless it's physically violent. And so, because this is all words, everyone can make out like it's not as bad as it could be. And until it is as bad as it could be, and then it's too late. You know, we'll go back to that. You know, they came after that person, but it wasn't me, so I did nothing. Phrase that you use quite often.
Yeah.
You know, how long?
You're making me sound quite repetitive and boring, Jordan, in this call.
No, I don't think so. I think that, I think that you should keep
hitting these marks because they keep being proved
this
right.
Is it.
Oh, and by the way, they don't mean you. She doesn't mean you, by the way. She doesn't mean Zia Yusuf. She doesn't mean Trevor Phillips. She doesn't mean you until she does.
Precisely. And this is where we're at now. We're in a position. We are now on the precipice of a potential reform government in 3 years. And if this is the standard they're setting now, my despair comes with what we're going to have when we get to that point.
And what will have by then been normalised. And of course, it's a little bit lazy, but I don't think that is a reason not to do it, to remind each other that if you want to have an idea about what that direction of traffic looks like, just hop over the Atlantic, which we will be doing at 11:45 today when Simon Marks joins us to discuss, among other things, the increasing volume of conversations about Donald Trump completely destroying the democratic tradition in the United States of America and hanging around for a third term. And that is a conversation that has been conducted by one of the most racist people in his support team, the one who actually came out and said that people should stop being embarrassed by accusations of racism and instead embrace them. Another close personal friend of Mr. Nigel Farage. It's almost as if all of this stuff was somehow connected.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, has told LBC that new protections for social tenants will be expanded to the private sector as soon as possible. Social landlords in England are now required to fix damp and mould issues within a tighter time frame. Awab's Law is named after a two-year-old boy who died as a result of mould exposure. Mr. Reid's also confirmed landlords will be required to keep homes at a safe temperature.
This is just the first phase. We want to roll this scheme out to cover private rented tenants as well, and also other forms of danger in the home, including excess heat of the kind that we see in the summer with rising temperatures, and in the winter, of course, with excess cold, which can also be very damaging, particularly to vulnerable people's health.
A highly critical report says the Home Office has squandered billions of pounds of taxpayers' money on asylum hotels. The Home Affairs Committee says the system is failed, chaotic and expensive, with poor oversight of the private companies involved. Ministers say they're already exploring alternatives to hotels to save money. Prisons in England and Wales are to introduce stronger checks before prisoners are released. It follows the mistaken release of the sex offender Hadish Kabatu, who is now expected to be deported this week. He was arrested in North London yesterday after a two-day search. His Majesty's Chief Inspector of Prisons is Charlie Taylor.
It doesn't help that this has been a part of government that seems to have been a revolving door for many, many years. And it does mean that ministers often are not there long enough to be able to get the level of grip that they need in an incredibly complex department.
The government says it's working with the energy firm Petrofac after it filed for administration. It puts about 2,000 jobs in Scotland at risk, but the group says it will continue to trade and is looking for restructuring options. It's been hit by the termination of a major offshore wind energy contract. The King is set to unveil the UK's first armed forces memorial for LGBT people. It's designed to honour those currently serving and commemorate veterans affected by the pre-2000 ban on gay personnel. Charles will lay flowers at the sculpture at the National Memorial Arboretum in Staffordshire. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading at 96.42. That is down 2 points. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for most places, but turning drier as we head through the afternoon. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
And now, the weather.
Outside, gloomy skies, a persistent drizzle, and a chilly wind blowing from the west, north, east, and south. But inside, temperatures of toasty warm with a high chance of comfy cushions, soft lighting, and a smattering of snuggly throws. Come home to cozy. Discover textiles and lighting at your local IKEA now. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 11, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I mean, it was a story to end all stories, wasn't it? What's the line from Casablanca? Of all the bars in all the world, you had to walk into this one. Well, of all the prisoners in all the prisons, this one had to walk out of one. I mean, it has absolute... Listen, before I continue, let's not make any lightness whatsoever of the offences that saw Hadush Kibatu, an Ethiopian man, arrested and incarcerated, convicted and incarcerated. He is a sex offender, and he received a 12-month sentence for his gross behaviour towards a young woman and girl on the streets of Epping. And it is the presence of the word Epping in that sentence, of course, that fits the description I just gave of all the prisoners that could have actually been mistakenly released from prison early in the febrile and increasingly hideous atmosphere of British political discourse, defined in many ways by racists like Sarah Pochin. The idea that this guy, the actual sex offender who prompted those protests outside the hotel, which were, of course, quickly leapt upon by lots and lots of racists. They weren't started by racists. They were leapt upon by lots and lots of racists and domestic abusers. 40% of the men arrested at the scene of those protests had previously come to the authorities' attention regarding allegations of domestic abuse. So they were a lovely bunch of guys. And of course, the idea that everybody in a building that contains or contained one person who committed an offence are somehow on the hook for offences or somehow to be feared or to be suspicious is exactly the same rhetoric that saw people trying to set fire to hotels during the Farage riots last summer because various other racists had spread various lies about the perpetrator and the culprit. But even if those lies hadn't been lies, why would you go and try to burn down... why would anybody go to try and burn down your house because of somebody with the same star sign or name as you committing a crime on the other side of the country? Riddle me that. Actually, don't. I know the answer. It's racism. So there couldn't have been a worse character to get let out of prison earlier than this scumbag. But the story... Once you've acknowledged and accepted the sexual assault of a 14-year-old girl, I think that was the only crime he was actually banged up for, is, well, it's 50% the thick of it and 50% yes, minister. It's absolutely extraordinary. And it gets more extraordinary the more you read into it. He tried to get back in, on, according to reports, on either four or five occasions. So the question I was going to ask you was, how does this happen? And then I sort of thought to myself, how many times does this happen? And I found out that it happened 262 times in the year to March. 262 times. And this is the bit I don't get. I've never worked in a prison. I've only ever visited one once. And I was on a charity gig. I wasn't visiting a friend or anything like that. I don't quite understand how that process cannot be more rigorous. I kind of understood how that other fella could get out by strapping himself to the undercarriage of a truck and doing a full James Bond. But the idea that there's not at least... to be honest, I know that shoplifting is an epidemic, but some shops have got on top of shoplifting. It's quite hard to get out of my local Lidl. You can't get out of my local Lidl unless you've got a barcode on a receipt that is live, that is, you know, measurably something that has been issued from a till in the last few minutes. Otherwise, you're going to have to vault over the security gates, which is like announcing to the security guards who in my local Lidl, actually, and in my local Morrison's, the security guards do their job. They do actually stop people and caution people and try to minimise or indeed remove the amount of shoplifting. It's probably harder to get out of Morrison's or Lidl than it is to get out of this prison. Chelmsford Prison, because nobody double-checked. He even told them, according to reports, that he wasn't supposed to be released. He said to them, I think this is a mistake. I'm paraphrasing slightly because I wasn't there and I haven't been provided with any video footage. But he said words to the effect of, I don't think I'm supposed to be released. I'm being deported next week. At which point, surely somebody in the office would go, hang on a minute, Bob. This fella says he's supposed to be deported next week. And I also, bit of an alarm bell. I don't know, for me at least. He says he doesn't want to leave. I go, no, sorry, mate, you got to go. Chelmsford Railway Station is that way. Off you go. Deported, schmorted. What a ridiculous character. Honestly, we see all sorts in here, don't we, John? Oh, off you go, pal. Here you go. Here's your, what, is it £12.50 and your bag of spuds? See you later. And he's still in his prison tracksuit. He goes to Chelmsford Station and then reportedly comes back again. He comes back again. He comes back to tell them that he's pretty sure that he doesn't think he should have been released from prison. He returned, according to Sky News, 4 or 5 times, according to a witness. A delivery driver who spoke to him said he was confused, was sent to the prison, to the railway station by prison staff. About 12 hours later, he had 3 separate police forces looking for him, but the delivery driver who Sky News spoke to, who was delivering equipment to the prison on Friday, explained that he came back 4 or 5 times. He came out of the airlock and he kept saying to the officers, where am I going? What am I doing? I don't know where I'm going and what I'm doing. He was holding a pack of paperwork in his arms and his bag of bits, not spuds, forgive me. He knew he'd been deported. He came over to me and said, I need you to help me. His English was pretty good. He says Kibato must have been outside the prison for roughly an hour and a half. So he's kicking his heels outside the prison for an hour and a half. And not one, and I'm going to pretend that I am familiar with the parlance of prisons now, not one screw turned to a colleague and said, that's a bit off, lads. That's not, that, I mean, normally they're out of here like Roadrunner. Meep, meep. Normally, they're running up that road. Can't get to Chelmsford Railway Station quickly enough. But this fella's been hanging around in the car park for an hour and a half, and he says we're supposed to be deporting him next week. Shall we have another look at his file? And nobody did that, apparently. Nobody did that. So, about an hour and a half outside the prison, the officers kept sending him away, going, go, you've been released, go. And this is possibly the best bit of the story. The driver, whose name is Sim, described Kibato as being very confused and said he kept scratching his head. This is like a cartoon. I mean, the Roadrunner reference was no accident. He kept scratching his head and saying, where do I go? Where do I go? The 4th or 5th time he went into the reception, he was starting to get upset. He was getting stressed. I'm not sticking up for the guy, and for the avoidance of any doubt, and I'm sure no one could make that mistake, nor am I. The 14-year-old girl that he sexually assaulted is by far the most important story in this case, most important person in this story until he was let out of prison early. In my eyes, he was trying to do the right thing. He knew he was getting deported, but he didn't know where he was going or how he should get there. Kafkaesque is a very overused phrase, referring to the understudied drama of Franz Kafka, where people can't quite believe what is happening to them. There's a fellow who goes on trial, and it's an exercise in sort of surrealism, really, and kind of almost comical authoritarianism. Another bloke goes to bed one night, wakes up the next morning, and he's turned into an insect. Kafkaesque is a very overused phrase, but there are lines in this story which are positively and
definitively Kafka-esque. He added, the driver, that officers had no interest in helping him, saying, "You're released! You're released!" So at the gates of Chelmsford Prison, you've got a queue of prison officers saying, "Go! Just go, will you? You're released!" And you've got a prisoner coming back four or five times saying, I don't think I'm supposed to be... I'm being deported next week. I don't think I'm supposed to be... He was trying to get back into prison, is the best way of putting it. He was trying to get back into prison. How did this happen? 0345 6060973. I have a slight problem with topics like this, all law and order topics, and I don't want to sound ungrateful. To clarify, I was right the first time. He was sentenced for sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl and a woman outside the facility in Epping where he had been staying. Quite often when we do topics that involve policing or prison officering, there is a preponderance. I'm going to sound like Sarah Poaching now. It drives me mad when all of the contributors are ex or retired prison officers or police officers. Because although you've got views and no, I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't exclude anybody from this programme. I'll be getting a job with Nigel Farage's outfit soon if I start talking about people as if they have more inherent value according to some characteristic or other. But I want to know how it happened. And I know that there will be people listening to this programme who know how it happened. How did it happen? And I wonder whether, having used the word screw, I'm now going to return to the 1970s and use the word ex-lags. I wonder whether ex-lags, as you have to phrase that quite carefully, don't you? Former prisoners, old boy, former prisoners. Old lags. Now, old lags are people who are still in prison, but they've been there for a long time, I think. Ex-lags are, which sounds a little bit like a constipation treatment, doesn't it? How did it happen? I have no idea how this could have happened. And it's not the mistake. It's the compounding of the mistake. It's a bit like if I said a naughty on the radio, and I didn't notice it myself, if for somehow I slipped. There are gatekeepers. There are colleagues who just go, "Did he just say the F word?" "Yes, he did. Quick, press the button." How did nobody at any point say, he wants to come back into prison. He says he's been deported next week. Maybe we should have another look at his file. So there are two questions effectively here. How did he get let out early in the first time? Although 261 prisoners did last year. I'm less confused by that. No, I'm not. I'm not less confused by it. I'm utterly mystified as to how anybody could be let out of prison early. All right? How does that happen? What is the bureaucratic mix-up, the red tape or the human error that lets you understand how this could happen? 0345 6060 973. But in many ways, the bit that I find more mystifying is the bit where he couldn't get back in again. The bit where nobody thought, this is a bit rum. This is a little bit out of the ordinary. This is not a normal day at the office. We've just let someone out who insists we shouldn't have done, but hey-ho, he seems a bit confused. He probably doesn't realise that his time has been served. And he keeps trying to get back in again, and he says we're supposed to be deporting him next week. How could that bit... There's two bits here. Bit number one, how does it happen? 262 times in a year. I would have thought, it being a prison, that one would be a scandal. But apparently 262 is priced into the system. And number two, how would... I mean, you've worked on a prison gate, or you've walked through one. Or you're just an expert on Jobsworths or whatever it might be that explains this particular incident. How would that vignette, how would that episode, which I am going to call Kafkaesque, how would it have unfolded? Would nobody have turned... I mean, are they on their first day? Are they all from an agency? Nobody turned to anybody else and said, are we actually sure about this? Hit the numbers now, you will get through, OK? 0345 6060 973. He kept scratching his head and saying, where do I go? Where do I go? And the officers kept saying, go to the railway station, go to the railway station. And nobody thought, are we sure that this guy is supposed to be released today? What do you think happened? Make sense of it for somebody who has never and hopefully will never have any dealings whatsoever with the prison service from either side of the prison door.
This is LBC.
Business healthcare, Sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which...
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18-plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 11:18. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we are trying to unravel the simultaneously horrifying and hilarious story. Horrifying because this man clearly still poses a threat to women and children, but hilarious because of the vignette painted by an eyewitness of a man being released from prison against his will. Not a phrase that you've ever heard, I don't think, before. A man being released. Well, you do occasionally hear about people who've become so institutionalized that they can't cope in the outside world, but he hadn't been there for long enough for that to have happened, and he has reportedly expressed the desire to be deported to Ethiopia. So the question of how this could have happened is the one that I want answered, and I suspect you'll have to be either a prison officer, past or present, or you are somebody who has been imprisoned and marvelled at the way in which you can either waltz through the doors or get released early. The other story in the news involves a justice minister expressing profound worries about prisons filling up again. And it occurs to me that almost every conversation we have about the state of the nation at the moment tracks back to the last government. Chris Grayling, in charge of prisons, various Tory justice ministers told and indeed warned that prisons were reaching breaking point, but Rishi Sunak electing to completely ignore it because there was an election on the horizon and expecting the Labour government to somehow waltz in and mop everything up in the meantime, proving a little bit ambitious. Not to excuse some of the mistakes they've made and the balls that they've dropped, but the idea that they'll be able to undo everything and fix up everything in the time that they've had so far is obviously absurd. But it's the escaped prisoner that I am most interested in, and the vexed question of how on earth it could have happened. Who would be best qualified? Former prisoner or prison guard? I don't know that serving prison guards are allowed to talk to me, which is why I very cleverly stopped myself from discouraging former prison guards to ring in. But who would have the best insight into how this happens, the prisoner or the officer? Let's find out, because you're both welcome to contribute. Sam's in Great Dunmo. Sam, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Yes, I was at Chelsea Prison, which is a black prison, Category B, the second highest category you can get.
Gosh.
And I just happen to know that not only will, as you described, this guy have been trying to get back into the prison, he will also have been telling them, I shouldn't be being let out in this way, because he'll know through the procedure that when he was arrested at Harlow, for example, he will have been transported by security in a van to the prison. He will have been...
We've done our best with the phone line. It's a bit dodgy. Normally I'd move on, but I really, really, really want to hear this. And it's one of those topics where I'm unlikely to be bombarded by people who have qualifications or have the experience to to fill me in. So I don't let him go. Don't let him go. Keep him on the hook and try and get him back on the line. Shall I go to Alison in Edinburgh in the meantime? Alison is in Edinburgh. I should have cast my net a little wider to continue with the fishing analogies, because there will be people who are neither prisoners nor prison officers who may have insights into how this happened, Alison, and I think you might be one of them.
I've worked in the Ministry of Justice in recruitment.
Perfect.
So my observations would be that people don't stay in the role long enough. They're not interested in staying. It's not paid enough.
I get this. I wouldn't do this on my second day in the job, and nor would you. There's a bloke there. He insists we shouldn't be releasing them. He says he's the Epping hotel sex offender. He's being deported next week, and they just put their fingers in their ears and go la 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 la. Off you trot, mate. Get yourself a sandwich at the station.
Yeah, and I don't think that's I don't think it's fair to say that about the people that are working there, because they haven't had the right training and they haven't been equipped with the right skills. So I think during COVID, when I was doing recruitment for the probation and prison service, everything was done online, and people were recruited into roles where they'd never actually physically understood what happened to be, what the role involved. And so the attrition is massive. And so you've got a whole load of people who are inexperienced, ill-equipped.
I think this is part of the Chris Grayling effect, isn't it? I think we go back to what he did to prisons and to parole. I think in shorthand, getting rid of people with experience and replacing them with people with none, because they were a heck of a lot cheaper. And I do want to criticise the people who were on the gate this weekend. I don't want to let them off the hook entirely, but you offer up mitigation, I think, to use a legal term.
Yes.
The bit I don't think anyone will get until someone can really pin it down is the failure to think that they might have made a mistake when he came back on, let's say, the fourth occasion, Alison.
Oh, well, absolutely. At that point, the point at which somebody's come back, and I get that sometimes you've got people with mental health issues who maybe, actually want to be inside because actually they feel safer. I get you've got all of that, and I suspect there's an element of that going on. But once somebody's done that a few times, you would at least check, wouldn't you?
Well, I would have thought so. The kind of people who are applying for these jobs, are they... They just need a job. They're not particularly interested in working for the prison service. And as you say, the attrition rate is high when they realise how stressful and potentially dangerous it is. And so, and your job is just to get some people on the payroll because the service is understaffed. Is it that simple, or am I being a bit glib?
we have to do an evidence-based approach to assessments, but during COVID, when everything was done online, so one of the things that happened was maybe, say, for example, a role play of a prison, an inmate who was maybe being aggressive, and how you would deal with it as a prison officer, completely different to how it would be in reality if you were face-to-face in there in the moment.
Oh, dear. Should we do one?
We can.
Okay. What sort of things would pop up?
Well, there would... It would be... Well, any sort
I'll tell
of
you what never scenario. Happened. I'll tell you what never happened. Uh-huh. They never said, this fella's just come back for the fourth time, and he says we weren't supposed to release him in the first place. Now workshop that.
Yeah. I've never had that role play. We'll need to add that into the portfolio.
Yes, we would. So, it would be more obvious scenario. None of this is helping, is it? I understand that the talent pool is thinner than perhaps we would like, which is offensive to prison officers. But
that is offensive because these are people that are trying to do the right thing and going for a really good job. It's just that they're not supported and they're not given the right training and they're potentially not. The right people, but that's down to the recruitment process.
I get all of that, and I mean, it'd probably be a bit irresponsible in the circumstances to do an actual role play, because the only one worth doing would be the one when he came back scratching his head on the fourth occasion and said, I don't think you're supposed to have released me, I'm being deported next week, but oh Lord, thank you, insights, but even then, listen, I don't know how many first days in a job you can remember. Even if it was your first day and you weren't really qualified. I always think of a friend of mine who signed up with a temping agency and they asked for a list of all the software packages that she was familiar with. So she just ticked them all because she really needed a job. And she got to work at the hospital on the first day and they just sat her in front of a terminal and said, off you go. And she might as well have been asked to teach a class in Mandarin. So she just asked where the ladies was and ran, just legged it. But it's your first day as a prison officer. And someone you're releasing says, I don't think you're supposed to be releasing me. You'd check. And if he's been in the news, on front pages, in the previous 3 month window, I don't know. Let's go back to Sam. Category B prisoner, familiar with Chelmsford. What happened, Sam?
Hi. Sorry I got cut off earlier on.
Well, didn't I cut you off? Your phone line was rubbish, but it's brilliant. Yeah. Did Eleanor make you climb a tree?
Well, look, if anyone who wants to get familiar with it, it's actually Chelmsford Prison is the prison where Porridge was filmed, the original Porridge series.
In fact, just gets better.
And it's never, ever changed. That those are the conditions that people are kept in.
Are they the gates through which he would have walked or not? Surely
precisely those gates, yes.
Holy moly. Go on.
Yeah, anyway, there's a procedure there. So when a person is arrested, they're brought from Harlow to Chelmsford County Court, they're committed to the Crown Court. At every stage, they're handed over to custody officers and security officers. So when he was being released from Chelmsford, he will have been brought from his cell to a holding area. Usually prisoners that are not sexual offenders get put in with each other. So there'll be four or five waiting to be released that day or transferred, and they're held in this area. Which is like a cell for, you know, multiple people.
Yeah.
And they sit there for upwards of an hour at the very least. They're then processed, they're taken to the release and, you know, when they bring them into the prison, both at the same place. They're given back their possessions that they'd handed over at the time.
Yeah.
They're released, they're, you know, given a travel warrant and things like that.
So there's a long chain of incompetence here.
Precisely. It has to be deliberate because there's no way that can be achieved through incompetence.
It can't be deliberate, mate. Come on.
It must be.
It happened 262 times in the year to March.
How can a chain of people, a hierarchy of people, all of whom are responsible and answerable to a hierarchy of command, all the way up to the governor of the prison, all fail in separate departments, and this is such a high priority case. It has to be the case that this guy was released, and it beggars the question, well, why? What
are you going a bit tinfoil hat on me to embarrass Keir Starmer?
No, I don't think it's to embarrass Keir Starmer. I think it might be to further promote the narrative of, you know, this country's broken.
Gosh. I don't think you're... I mean, I wrote the book, mate, literally, but I don't necessarily buy into this. And the reason I don't buy into it is it happened 262 times in the year to March.
Yeah, but let's ask the question, how many times did it happen in a B-category prison, which is the second highest category in the UK? I can imagine it happening very often in a D-category prison, which is an open prison.
Yeah.
I can imagine it happening in a
good point.
C-category
prison. That might dilute the numbers somewhat, mightn't it? 262. Yeah. Well, error. Yeah. It's, oh, crikey. Well, do you know... It sounds odd, really, given that it is a prison sentence that counts as your qualification. If someone had texted it, I think Porridge was filmed at St. Albans, which looks like Chelmsford.
Sorry?
I think Porridge was filmed at St. Albans, which looks like Chelmsford.
The internal talk when I was in the prison
It's not mystery. Yeah. You don't have to go definitive.
Their claim to fame.
But you do have qualifications, and they are, having been a Category B prisoner, which is quite high risk of absconding, literally.
Yeah.
Okay, so you think it was an inside job?
That's my personal opinion. How else can you do that? And then, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. This is the area you've got to remember where Jada Franson and all of these people, it was their heartland, Chelmsford. There's a lot of mobility now where asylum seekers are being brought there by coach and left in Chelmsford. So there's a lot of animosity, and I think it's a possibility. It should be looked into.
Okay. Well, I can't argue with the idea that it should be looked into, and I don't know how much of a possibility it is, but quite a lot of people agree with you. In fact, some people are even citing Occam's razor, which, of course, teaches us that if the answer is not immediately clear, then it's almost certainly the most obvious. And all I'd offer up in rejection of that, for being a bit conspiratorial and a bit glib, is that there were 261 other ones in the year to March. But as Sam has pointed out, that will have involved all sorts of prisons. It wouldn't have been a sex offender in a relatively high security facility. So from a prison officer's, maybe that, from a prison officer's point of view, how did this happen? Particularly the second bit, when he told them they made a mistake and he came back not once, not twice, not three times, but four times to essentially say, let me back in again. It's 11:31. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Ministers say new protections for social tenants will be expanded to the private sector as soon as possible. Social landlords in England are now required to fix damp and mould issues within a tighter time frame under AWAB's law. Prisons in England and Wales are to introduce stronger checks before prisoners are released. It follows the mistaken release of the sex offender Harish Kabatu, who is now expected to be deported this week. The oil and energy firm Petrofac is set to go into administration, putting 2,000 jobs in Scotland at risk. The group says it will continue to trade and is looking at restructuring options. LBC weather, sunny spells and scattered showers for many, turning drier through the afternoon, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m.
I have found completely shocking the extent of the anti-Semitism that people have felt because of what's been going on in the Middle East, emboldened not just to criticise the Israeli government, but to use what is happening in the Middle East as a way of allowing you to expose what you really believe. And I think a lot of people have shown themselves for what they really are.
Tom Swarbrick, with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions, built for businesses. LBC.
Breakfast is the most important meal of the day, followed by elevenses, brunch, lunch or dinner, then tea or dinner.
Or supper, depending where you're from.
Look, can we at least agree that breakfast is the most important meal of the day? That's why Warburton's, the family bakers, teamed up with organisations like Magic Breakfast to donate millions of breakfasts this year to schools in the UK. Good stuff. It's baked in at Warburton's. To find out more, search Warburton's Good Stuff.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, books. Always.
Yes, quite.
I read e-books. Oh, I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh. They make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness. Maybe it's time for varifocals. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
You know, sometimes you just want to mosey. Travel your own world. Slow things down a mite. Meet the locals and smell the coffee. So friends, take time to sit down with the folks at Little America and let them tailor-make your trip to Canada and the U.S. just the way you like it. For slow travel that nourishes the soul, head to littleamerica.co.uk.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:34 is the time. I mean, you heard it. On the one hand, you've got the sort of relatively sane and rational explanation that prison officers are so inexperienced and so wet behind the ears that this could have occurred, conceivably, at which point my quibble becomes, yeah, but surely one of them would have said to the others. And the point at which he comes back for the fourth time saying I shouldn't have been released. And on the other hand, you've got the former prisoner saying that there's no way this could have happened by accident and it must be some sort of inside job. I can't quite accept that, because this programme is historically the sworn enemy of all conspiracy theories and the biggest supporter of Occam's razor. But what if the conspiracy theory is Occam's razor? What if the inside job is actually the easiest and simplest explanation? I don't know. Steve suggests that it is hard to accept, but it might be in more than one prison officer's interest for him to be released by accident. If they hadn't caught him again, you know that there are members of... I'll give you a clue. The kind of people who turn on their television, count all the black and brown faces in the adverts and go mad. There are people in public discourse today who would have made huge hay out of this, while ignoring, of course, all manner of other crimes and misdemeanours, and they have been robbed, if you like, of a wonderful opportunity. But that's not surely enough for anyone truly qualified to conclude that this couldn't have happened without collusion. Sarah is in Eltham. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello.
As I said to your producer, I was a prison officer, and became a manager over the 22 years that I did it.
Okay.
And part of my duties when I was a senior officer was to work in the reception area where we would do all the releases, transfers, etc.
Right, can you describe it to me? How many people are there?
Quite a few. I didn't work in a very large prison, but there was a couple of senior officers. Three. And there would have been around about seven or eight staff as well.
So ten.
Very busy.
So Chelmsford bigger than where you worked, do we think?
Yeah.
So
yeah, a little bit bigger.
15 to 20 people more. Around the place?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. But as a senior officer, you know, the responsibility you have when you put a prisoner through that door, the paperwork that needs to be checked, the warrants, the court paperwork, depending on, you know, how they're being released, dealing with licenses, making sure the prisoner understands it, that they've signed everything they need to sign.
Yeah.
It's a really long process.
Well, you'd hope so, especially with a sex offender.
Of course. It has to be. So I'm baffled as to how this has happened.
Oh, no.
However, I was one of the cohort, I suppose, that did 22 years service, and I suppose I was quite an expensive officer in the end. And I was made redundant in 2015.
Grayling casualty. One of Grayling's failings.
Absolutely. So along with, you know, many, many of my colleagues who had got many, many years of experience. And being a prison officer is the type of job where experience is everything.
No kidding.
It's, you know, you learn on the job, and the longer you do it, the better you get at handling the prisoners. And it's not the sort of thing you can just, you know, come in off the street and...
Well, except it is now.
You do 9 weeks training, or it was when I was a prison officer, and then you go in and learn the job properly once you get inside the jail. But there's so many people there.
I mean, this is the only thing. I mean, I didn't think this was going to go down the road it's gone down, but it looks from my inbox and indeed the switchboard as if I'm more or less the only one who thinks it's too pie in the sky to be plausible that this was not complete incompetence or repeated human error. But you've got 15 or 20 people. I mean, what would have happened on your shift if somehow one had slipped through the net? And then he came back and said, I don't think you should have let me go. I'm being deported next week. Surely at that point you would...
Good grief.
Yeah.
I would have... he would have been straight back in within seconds.
Back to Alison in Edinburgh now. I want to do a workshop. I want to do a role play. So the second, third and fourth time he's coming back and saying, I shouldn't be released. I'm being deported next week. Let me back in, please.
I mean, I would hope that's something that doesn't happen very often.
Well,
that
the
prisoner is
both.
Coming back and saying, I shouldn't be out here, I should be somewhere else. But, baffling. But, you know, when I left and a lot of my colleagues left, we had conversations that this is where we would end up.
We did as well, and I'm a radio host. You know? I had your colleagues and people ringing me quite regularly to say, don't, like in any job, if you're trying to save money by getting rid of the experienced people and replacing them with inexperienced people, it's a recipe for disaster. And then, of course, because of other relatively ill-advised or populist policies, they fill the prison to bursting point when they're at their least capable position in generations for actually running them properly.
Absolutely. I really feel for the staff at the moment. I think, you know, they...
So scale of 1 to 10, the likelihood of this being some sort of conspiracy? And I know you bulk at... No, it has to just be error. It has to just be error.
What would anyone have to gain from
Well, some
doing
sort
that?
Of race war, you know, some sort of political... If it was just one person's decision and he was in his last week and they'd fired him for stealing biscuits and he just thought, right, I'm going to give Nigel a big gift now and I'm going to let this bloke go early. But it would have to have come through so many layers and levels.
Absolutely, yeah. There would have to have been so many people involved. You know, you've also got the administration staff who prepare all the paperwork and do all the calculations and...
You've got nothing then.
Other people involved as well.
Yeah, but that's it. You can't account for it. You're just confident it wouldn't be the thing that was suggested.
Absolutely. I just think they're massively understaffed. They're massively, in some cases, maybe unsuitable. I mean, when I joined, the majority of the people on my training course were ex-forces. That's the sort of person that job attracted.
Yeah, it's got to help.
People who were already
in
a disciplined state of mind. Well, I don't know. The money is so poor. And it is such a difficult job. I keep noticing
more stories. It might just be because of the things I notice as I get older, but there's more and more stories about young women going to work in prisons and having relationships with the prisoners. I don't know if you've spotted an uptick in that as well.
Which I have. And
again, that's less likely to happen. Less likely to happen with former squaddies.
Absolutely, yes, of course. And, you know, equal opportunity, and everyone should have an opportunity to do it. But there is a certain demographic
low,
that fits a job
The bar is low. Do you know what you've also done, without intending to?
Mm-hmm.
You've highlighted a gap in my knowledge, and I don't really want to fill it, because I can't remember whether or not Grayling got a peerage as well for services to the nation. We've already had a bit of Lord Gove this morning, which is bad. Can you remember whether Grayling got a peerage for his services to the prison service?
I hope not.
Yeah, I
hope not
too.
He decimated it. He destroyed it.
Yeah, blaming it all on two-tier care, probably by tea time today, or probably they have already. I'm not going to check. I don't think I could cope if Grayling got a peerage as well. Sarah, that was brilliant. Thank you. Next time we'll do some role play. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about a prison officer and a prisoner doing role play together. I'm not being weird. Jim's in Leeds. Jim, what made you pick up the phone?
James, we've spoken before. I did tell you this.
Go on.
6 or 7 years ago that there was inexperienced staff, but you don't think you agreed with me at the time.
I did not disagree with you. I wouldn't have disagreed with you. I probably did that thing I used to do, because I'm dedicated to making groundbreaking and revolutionary radio, as you know, Jim. That if I get a lot of people saying the same thing to me, it pricks my impatience somewhat. And it shouldn't, because if I've got a lot of people saying the same thing to me, it's true, isn't it? It means it's true. I should be paying even more attention.
My story is long. I'll try and give you a brief description. So I worked for Security Corps in the courts to start off with. The natural progression from that was to the prison service.
Yep.
And so I worked at a very large prison in Surrey. Okay. Probably the largest male prison in Surrey.
Yes.
Then I took redundancy like Sarah. Mm. They came along and said, Jim, do you want this? I was like, thank you very much. Off I went.
Yeah.
Left prison service, had a little bit of an accident. Couldn't spend my redundancy on that. So then I potted around and then worked for Ocado for a little while.
Okay.
Came back, went back to the prison service in 2018. Went to training then, and the training was a farce.
So you can compare the two experiences, training the first time round versus the training the second time round.
Yeah, so the first time round was very, very strict. It was all in the classroom, and ladies had to have their hair tied up. There was no ladies' hair allowed to be on their collar.
Mm.
Shirts had to be ironed pristine. Men wearing ties even in training. And the people that trained us, very, very experienced, very good people. Second time round, went up to the training college. And this is no word of a lie. We had 6 different tutors in the 8 weeks that I was there. And one of the tutors, I had to help him, so I'd put handcuffs on people practicing for escorts.
It's not funny. It's not funny.
James, if you wanted to, I could send you the emails of proof I sent back to the people who employed me in my new prison, telling them exactly what this guy was doing. I had to show him how to put handcuffs on, because this man hadn't worked on prison landings for, I think he told me, 8 or 9 years, maybe longer. He's working in groups, but because it was as a promotion and it was Monday to Friday job, he was laughing.
So what happened then in Chelmsford?
Error.
But how many errors?
So like Sarah was saying, so if you're getting people, if they respect people working Boots, so we had a lady who come to work at my first prison, who worked at Boots dispensing glasses. We had a lady who come working there. She was from Toys R Us. Again, no disrespect, working on us, defunct now, but working at Toys R Us. If you're employing 18, 19, 20, 20... To me, personally, it should be an age limit. To me, it should be like the old days in the police, 25 upwards. People have no life
experience.
You've got
to be 21 to be a driving instructor. It came up on the Michael McIntyre quiz show at the weekend.
It did last night, actually. I watched that last night.
It was good, wasn't it? Really lucky, wasn't she? Well, not lucky. She played a blinder.
Left school, so lived college at 18, if you go work in the prison service, the one closest to me that I may rejoin at some point,
yeah,
but maybe we speak that privately, I could go back now on a 41-hour contract, £44,000 a year. All I've got to do is pass some role plays that are online. Again, the first time I did role plays was face to face with some very angry who were officers at the time, shouted in your face, saying, you've done this. The first one I remember is, you are a pub landlord, and somebody left your pub drunk, goes along the street, throws a brick through someone's house, they come along, and they're in your, literally nose to nose, telling you what they think of you. And you've got to try and placate these people.
I you're right, obviously. And I'm surprised at that starting salary. I thought it was underpaid.
No, that's for a big prison in Surrey.
No, I don't doubt what you're telling me. I mean, it won't necessarily be true. It might have something to do with your record as well. I'm not sure. But the bit I just can't get past the basic level of competence that you'd need.
So Sarah's quite right. So the prison I worked at is probably double the size she worked at. The one I worked at was 1,200 prisoners, and the one after that was 1,400 prisoners.
Yeah.
So a lot of prisoners. So you may have a staff. When I was at the first prison, they would make sure they had a minimum number of staff in. If it fell below that, it'd give overtime. It could never go below that certain number. Mr. Grayling with his pen and paper goes, you know, he's five staff, and he could do that with three staff.
It's Baron Grayling to you, mate.
I don't care what he is. He's my local MP as well. So when he started, he might have 12 staff working for 100.
Yeah, but when he came back,
six staff.
I didn't know that. Well, I did know that, but you can't keep all the knowledge in your head all the time. When he came back the third time, or the fourth time, and said, I don't think you should have released me. I don't have anywhere to go. I'm being deported next week. Will you let me back in, please? How could nobody in the room where it happens have thought, let's have another look at the file?
James, I can't answer that question.
No, no one can.
Being embarrassed. If that was me, I think I would have handed my keys in at the gate and walked home.
Well, I mean, I wonder what is the equivalent in other professions. Letting someone not just go free early, but not letting them back in again when they told you their mistake. I think even Fletcher had to break back into prison when he was let go by mistake. I misremembered that. God, they repeat porridge often enough. We should all know every episode off by heart. Thank you, Jim. I think I got one more cracking call on this, but I don't know if we're going to have time for it, or for Andy, Billy, David, Barbara and others, because we've got Simon Marks on the other side of the news, or rather on the other side of this break, for our increasingly regular catch-ups with the madness of America.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Extraordinary scenes when the sex offender whose horse crime caused such consternation in one part of Essex was effectively on the run for much of the weekend, although it looks like he was freed in error. 262 prisoners were accidentally released last year, but none have proved as embarrassing to the Ministry of Justice as this one. This is a Whitehall farce, without any doubt. And how can Labour really say that they're trying to crack down on the gangs when they just release sex offenders onto the streets?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
Back tomorrow morning from 7, LBC.
Fishing. It's a wonderful way to spend an afternoon. But it could also be a huge threat to your business. Phishing emails are scams that trick you into giving away vital data, putting your company at risk. So how do you make sure you don't get caught? Hook, line and sinker. Just ask BT.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
The world is vast, offering endless possibilities. But Claire's world has only been getting smaller. She doesn't leave the country. She barely leaves the house. Still traumatized by that roadside bomb in Iraq. More than 20 years ago. For many, the battle continues. Combat Stress provides intensive mental health treatment to UK veterans with complex mental health problems, helping them rediscover the world they once knew. Combat Stress, for veterans' mental health. Search Combat Stress to support our work.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure, or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search State Pension Age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State Pension Age. It's good to know.
You asked, BT answered.
With phishing, awareness makes all the difference. Train your staff to spot suspicious emails and encourage them to slow down. Hackers rely on you being in a rush, so slowing down decreases your risk.
Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity to find out more.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10 to 12. There are some things that occur to me, and I start saying them, and then I start saying them again, and then I start saying them again and again and again, and then I stop saying them because I think they become self-evident. And the fact that it is almost impossible to keep track of Donald Trump's denigration of democracy in the United States of America has been filed under one of those things. I mean, the East Wing, when we started talking about it with Simon Marks last week, it was a relatively manageable construction project. Now they've knocked down the entire thing. How do you keep up with this sort of acceleration? And as if to prove the point, I mentioned to you earlier when I trailed Simon, when I told you that Simon, who's back in Washington, D.C., would be joining us today, I mentioned that Trump's ally, Steve Bannon, the well-known felon and race war provocateur, had been making noises about Donald Trump sticking around for a third term, which all of the people with what other racists and idiots like to call Trump derangement syndrome, is the kind of thing they've been denying or claiming is evidence of madness. So, A, one of his key allies is talking about it. I mentioned that to you about an hour and a half ago, and that story has moved on since I spoke to you, and Simon Marks is to tell us what's happened next already.
James, indeed, it has moved on. President Trump, as you know, is in Asia for most of this week, a trip that will culminate on Thursday with his first meeting face-to-face with Chinese President Xi Jinping, first meeting since 2019. Today, after those comments by Mr. Bannon, and we'll get to those in a second, President Trump has indicated that he is interested in possibly staying on for a third term in the White House. But he said, while he would love to do it, he said, I haven't really thought about it. If you believe that, you'll believe pretty much anything. He's gone on to indicate that he thinks Vice President J.D. Vance or Secretary of State Marco Rubio might make suitable replacements for him in January of 2029. But he certainly went back to the original idea by saying, I would love to do it. I have the best numbers ever. He did, however, rule out one plan that you and I spoke about a few days ago, which is the plan that would see President Trump run as a possible vice president to J.D. Vance, who would run for the presidency. And then as soon as they won the election and got into office, President Trump would then take over. The president has actually used exactly the phrase that I think I used on your program a few days ago to describe that plan. He said, I wouldn't do it. It's too cute. However, there's no question that Steve Bannon, his on-again, off-again political advisor, has absolutely been stoking the idea that Donald Trump is going nowhere. Take a listen to what he said in an interview recorded last week in Washington with The Economist.
Well, he's going to get a third term. So Trump 28, Trump is going to be president in 28. And people just ought to get accommodated with that.
So what about the 22nd Amendment?
There's many different alternatives. At the appropriate time, we'll lay out what the plan is. But there's a plan, and President Trump will be the president in 28. We had longer odds in 16 and longer odds in 24 than we got in 28. And President Trump will be the president of the United States, and the country needs him to be president of the United States. We have to finish what we started. And the way we finish it through Trump, Trump is a vehicle. I know this will drive you guys crazy, but he's a vehicle of divine providence.
A vehicle of divine providence. So there is a plan. It's a cunning one, and they'll reveal it in the fullness of time.
Just to clarify, Bannon went to jail for his refusal to comply with a congressional subpoena related to a January the 6th Capitol riot investigation. He did not go to jail, but he did plead guilty to charges of defrauding people over plans to build a private scheme for a wall on the US-Mexico borders. I mean, who wouldn't treat him like a paragon of virtue and insight? But he has had, or possibly still does have, Trump's ear. And I think we realised some time ago, you can't rule anything out.
No, I think that's absolutely right. He is a convicted fraudster. I mean, he did plead guilty to those fraud charges. They didn't send him to jail. The guilty plea spared him jail. And it's an extraordinary interview, that one, because you see the two senior editors from The Economist sort of struggling through the course of that 40-minute encounter to find a coherent philosophical strategy on the part of a man who demonstrates over the course of that 40 minutes that he doesn't have one. But the one coherent strategy he's got is to make sure that President Donald Trump and his Make America Great Again movement essentially turn this country into a one-party state. So we can't tell at this point what the cunning plan is to keep Donald Trump in power past January of 2029. But in that interview, he is so focused on the idea of smashing his opponents, clearly, absolutely lining up four square behind Deputy White House Chief of Staff Stephen Miller's plan, to flood the streets of America with troops, that perhaps, and this has to be speculative because he didn't disclose it, perhaps the plan is indeed to foment some kind of violence on the streets and then claim a national public security emergency in a way of extending the president's term. It's interesting that at CPAC, the CPAC conference a few months ago, there was a lot of discussion at that conference about something that they refer to as presidential tenure reform, which means basically finding a way of overriding the Second Amendment to the Constitution that says two full terms as president and you're done. It's definitely something they are all thinking about.
So if the amendment was a frog, it's been popped in the water, hasn't it? And the temperature is currently low, but rising.
Yeah, but the entire Constitution at this point has been popped in the water because we see so many of these constitutional checks and balances that we all thought were, you know, strong enough to preserve American democracy so that the country would never have a king, as those No Kings demonstrators argue. Some of them on the streets just over a week ago were saying, you know, the Constitution is this hallowed document. But in fact, when you look at how the Constitution is faring under this president, it looks much more like a hollow document than a hallowed one.
Kings need courtiers, of course, and one of Trump's has found $130 million down the back of the sofa to pay US government troops. Is that legal?
Well, there is a big question, James, about whether that is legal. This is a $130 million donation that President Trump disclosed last week had been handed over to him personally by a great patriot. It is reported here that that man is Timothy Mellon, the grandson of Andrew Mellon, the great investment bank founder, who has inherited vast amounts of money as a result of being descended from Andrew Mellon. And the $130 million was apparently given to Donald Trump and specifically earmarked for paying America's troops during the government shutdown. Now, $130 million actually only gives you enough money to pay each active duty soldier $100. But, you know, $100 is better than not getting $100. What is very unclear is whether this actually is legal. There is absolutely clear evidence that this breaches something called the Anti-Deficiency Act, which basically, sensibly, stops federal government agencies from taking money from anybody other than the United States Congress. Because otherwise, you could have all sorts of people flooding federal government departments with money to pay for specific projects, for example, that the wealthy people want to see enacted, even though Congress might not. But as ever, whether any legal action follows to prevent the president from banking this $130 million check and then using it to pay the troops or using it for something else, we see it's just completely opaque.
And where there's a quid, there's a quo. Finally, any word yet on what the new ballroom might be named?
Well, yeah, again, rather like the third term, he says he hasn't even thought about it. He hasn't even thought about a name. He did suggest last week that he didn't think he'd name it after himself. He thinks maybe it should just be called the Presidential Ballroom. But again, if you believe that, I've got some swampland in Florida to sell you.
Just quickly, for people who weren't listening last week, who haven't been properly following this story, the entire East Wing has been razed to the ground of the White House. It's like someone taking a wrecking ball to Buckingham Palace.
Yes, it's like, as I was saying last week, it's like a prime minister, a populist prime minister coming to power in number 10 Downing Street. And a few months after he moves in, one morning, suddenly diggers are spotted driving up Downing Street. And without any warning or any permission, they immediately start knocking down number 11. I mean, that's exactly what basically has occurred. About a third of the White House has now been razed to the ground to make way for this 90,000 square foot ballroom. The price tag has gone up again. Oh. We're now up to 300. 250 million. We were at going 250 on. Million last week, yes, during my first interaction with you. By the second one on Friday, we were at 300 million. Now we appear to be at 350 million. And the sky's the limit, isn't it?
So it would appear. Simon Marks, many thanks indeed. I don't know how many people had images of a UK Prime Minister of recent vintage who possibly would have undertaken the demolition job at Downing Street that Simon just posited. I'll tell you one thing for certain. If he had done, they'd have been JCBs.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the government has recommitted to expanding new housing protections to private tenants. People in social housing in England are now protected by Awab's Law, requiring landlords to fix damp and mould issues quickly. It's named after a two-year-old boy who died as a result of mould exposure. Lord Gove was the Conservative Housing Secretary when Awab's Law was drawn up.
Social landlords, in this case a housing association, but it can be local authorities, are the people who are paid for by us, in some cases elected directly by us, to look after us. And you have this tragic case of a child who was in circumstances that shame the country.
Figures shared with LBC show hundreds of homeless young people looking for help are being turned away by councils. Local authorities in England are legally obliged to support any residents facing homelessness, but Centrepoint says it's received 450 calls in the last year from people who've been denied help. Paul Brocklehurst, the charity's senior helpline manager, says some are particularly vulnerable.
They can't find anywhere else. There's a real risk they then going back into that dangerous situation. We know that too many people die at the hands of domestic abusers. With pregnancy, it's really important that make sure when someone's pregnant, they have access to appropriate healthcare, solid environment, access to food, and all these things are potentially being denied.
The local government association says councils are committed to meeting their duties. Prisons are expected to begin enhanced checks before inmates are released. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, will set out a series of measures later following the accidental release of Hadish Kabatu. The failed asylum seeker and sex offender is expected to be deported this week. A man has been arrested on suspicion of rape following reports of a racially aggravated attack in the West Midlands. It's understood the victim of Saturday's attack in Walsall was a Sikh student. About 2,000 jobs are at risk in Aberdeen after oil and gas firm Petrofac filed for administration. It follows the collapse of a wind energy contract in the Netherlands. The firm, which is in contact with ministers, says it will continue to trade and look at restructuring options. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 6 points at 96.52. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather staying with some sunny spells and scattered showers for most places this afternoon, becoming drier as the day goes on. A high of 14 degrees from Global's newsroom for LBC. I'm Thomas Watt.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 12 is the time. I just caught myself being a little bit cheeky, a little bit unprofessional there. I sort of found myself thinking that because Nick got my Lord Gove, good Lord, got Lord Gove on to talk about it, I hadn't paid as much attention to the story that he was talking out about as perhaps I should have done. So I think we'll talk about that next. The other contenders were Wes Streeting describing a sense of despair among the population. I'm telling you this because they may well pop up a little later in the week. And women bearing more of the stresses of the cost of living crisis than men. There's quite a big economic gender imbalance on this. A 29% increase in the gap between men and women's economic well-being in the past 12 months. That's probably worth a look at as well. But I sometimes get drawn to the stories that I am furthest removed from, because that's when I think we can perhaps be of more use than we are some of the time. And It's called Awab's Law. You'll remember the little boy who died after prolonged exposure to mould. I don't make any medical predictions, really, on this programme, except two that I've made over the years. The first is that the relationship between gut health and mental health is only going to become clearer and clearer and clearer in the years to come. And the danger that mould poses to all of our health, every aspect of our health, is hugely, hugely misunderstood and underappreciated. Mould is appalling in so many contexts that are at the vanguard of medical progress. The kind of stuff that some conditions the NHS doesn't recognise, or they won't see the link, or they didn't do it at medical school quite often. And this isn't a criticism, because God knows how hard it is to keep up. If they didn't do it at medical school, you'll encounter a degree of scepticism that something can even exist. But I'm giving you I'm giving you mould, and I'm giving you gut health. And in fact, there's probably links between the two. But that's not what we're talking about. Awab died, of course, after exposure to mould in his own home. I hate bad landlords. I mean, I hate them with a vengeance that I reserve for very few members of our society. I don't hate landlords. Let me be absolutely clear about that. Although I am deeply troubled by the notion of young people in particular earning enough money to buy a home, but not having enough savings to buy it for themselves. So instead, their rent, which they can just about afford, goes towards paying the mortgages of people who had enough capital to take out a mortgage on a home they weren't intending to live in. And listen, hey, it's money. It's finance. I personally, under my glorious rule, I would separate some phenomena from the brutal free market economics of capitalism. I'd look at things like essentials and treat them a little bit differently from other commodities. That would include housing, health, and energy, possibly a couple of other things as well, but those would be the obvious ones. Housing, health, and energy should not be commoditized in the way that, for example, Lego and caviar is. Just me. Well, it's not just me, obviously. It's a long line of visionary and compassionate politics. But we don't live in that world at the moment, although the current government is making some moves in the right direction. This is just unbearable, this story. The idea that social landlords, as opposed to private landlords, but we're going to look at both, even though today's story focuses on the former and not the latter. Landlords who fail to comply with the most basic of improvements. Not even improvements, repairs. Emergency health and safety hazards that are not fixed within 24 days of reporting or 24 months of reporting. Today, they'll get 24 hours to do it. Significant damp and mould will have to be investigated within 10 working days of notifications being made. Properties will have to be made safe within 5 working days after inspection, and the tenants must be made aware of the findings within 3 weeks. Within 3 working days of inspection completing. You know what I'm thinking already, don't you? We always find ourselves asking two questions with stories like this. The first is, what was it like? And the second is, will it work? So, what's the worst landlord I've ever... I've been so blessed. I've lived in some right old dives going back many, many, many years, obviously. But I also lived in some lovely places. And I never really had... The worst experience I ever had with a landlord was not being told that the previous resident had been murdered. Have I ever told you that story? After all the years that we've spent together, I sometimes think you've heard all of my anecdotes on several occasions. Keith is nodding furiously at this point. Have you ever heard that one? I don't think you have. We rented a house in South London. We've been there for about 3 or 4 months when the landlord's brother came round, who was the sort of handyman on the payroll of the managing agents. And he mentioned how he wasn't surprised. He was surprised that we'd taken the house. And I said, well, why would you be surprised? And it was reasonably priced. It wasn't cheap, but it was a little bit less than perhaps you might have expected in the area. And it turned out that the previous resident had actually been murdered. I don't want to go into any further detail because it's grim and grisly. But that's not landlord negligence, is it? It's just a little bit kind of, I mean, would you tell someone? I wouldn't tell someone. What estate agent on the planet would tell somebody that they were moving into a room whose previous incumbent had had actually been murdered? Not in the house. He was murdered in the street about half a mile around the corner. Horrible story. So I don't think, and I might remember something in the course of this programme, but I'm so old now that I've got elements of my life that I sometimes wonder whether they happened at all. I don't have it. I've never had it. So I want you to tell me about the... Let me get this right, actually, because this little boy looking out at me from the page of the Guardian newspaper... It's a black lad, so he'd drive Sarah Poaching mad, wouldn't he? Just seeing his little face in the newspaper, but he looked so sweet. And the family knew that, you know, sometimes with health issues, you know something's wrong. You know, you know that your child is getting iller. It's getting worse, and you're certain that sleeping in a damp bedroom is contributing to the problem. Sleeping in a mouldy bedroom, having bits of the kitchen wall falling into your dinner, falling into your breakfast, and you'd think, wouldn't you? We're so naive. We'd think that if you got onto the landlord and described a faulty radiator, the landlord might be a little bit slow on the uptake. Say, hello, yep, it's James here at number 37. I can't. It's terrible. I can't find the Netflix app on the television. Could you send somebody round? Yeah, all right. Bottom of the list. Phone up and say, I've got mould growing on my wall where my baby boy sleeps. This is why I hate them. Forgive me for using that word. I don't know how helpful it is, but I hate that human capability of seeing pound signs where the rest of us see people. It's not unique, you know. It's something that Carol Vorderman observed. I always remember her telling me this when the pandemic started. And she thought, she realised, because she was at the time friends or had recently been friends with people who saw pound signs at that moment. How can we make money out of this? Out of something that's going to leave tens of thousands of people dead. How can we make money out of it? And then other people. I don't know what the breakdown is. I begin to wonder sometimes. But how can we help? Or how can we keep our heads down? Or how can we stay out of trouble? You can be selfish and think, I can't worry about anybody else now. It's every man for himself. Or you can be unselfish. How can I help? How can I be a community person? How can I be altruistic? Or you can be one of Michael Gove's mates. And you can think to yourself, how can I make money out of this? How can I make money? And who do I have to call to make sure I'm at the front of the queue for all the lovely money that's going to be handed out while tens of thousands of us die? And I feel that these kinds of landlords are the pound shop versions of those VIP lane merchants that made so much money when the Tories gave priority with contracts for PPE to people they were mates with, in preference to people and companies that had long track records of providing precisely the sort of PPE that was needed. And I just want to know what you've had to live with. I want to know. Social landlords in particular, but I'll take calls about private ones as well, who I suspect are probably worse. You just expect social landlords to be better. So what happens when you report something unacceptable or unbearable to your landlord? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And listen, if people are listening to this and they go, oh, it's boring, I don't care, that's fine. I care. I just want to know, because one of the compounding elements of these stories will be the sense that nobody cares. It will be the silence with which you're greeted, not just by the landlord, but by everybody else as well. And because, you know, this is Britain, we don't like to make a fuss. We're not, most of us, equipped with particularly sharp elbows. You get on the phone to the landlord refuses to help or ignores your calls or does nothing to deal with the damp or the mould or the flood or the water or the rats. God forbid there are rats. And the loneliness. The loneliness must be, or the sense of abandonment and isolation must be almost as bad as the condition itself. There are a few more bleak words in the English language than nobody cares. Nobody cares. The landlords bank on it. I'm going to go to the local paper. Don't care. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Don't care. Nobody cares. And I don't even know if there's anything that we can do about it. Except care sometimes. about what it's like to live in circumstances that nobody should have to live in. So that's the first question. What? Just give us an idea from the front line of reporting to the rubbish landlord, to the landlord who doesn't care. I don't want calls from landlords to tell me that they're not like this at all. No offence, it's not that phoning. All right, so you put your phone back in your pocket. I fully appreciate. I've already said there are some great. I was a bloody landlord for a while. Not entirely on purpose, but I was brilliant. I was round there faster than you could say Jack Robinson to fix everything under the sun. So I know that, but this isn't about you, lads. This is about the landlords that don't respond to emergency health and safety hazards. I wonder who, and I hesitate to turn this into a competition, but I wonder who's got the worst. I wonder who's got the worst. That, like, the thing that we won't believe you had to live with. And if we won't believe that you had to live with it, we really won't believe how long you had to live with it for. You know, like gas or water, floods, moulds, cold. Rats would be, for me, a little better than I used to be, but that would be one of the absolute worst things. And the landlord's got you right where he or she wants you, because you've got nowhere else to go. Especially if you're in social housing. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And not for the first time, I find myself reflecting upon how many stories about broken Britain is currently the word most used by British people to describe the country, broken. There's a book I can recommend if you're interested in who broke it and how it happened. But so much of what we talk about goes back to decisions taken between 2010 and 2024. Whether this is one of them or not, we will find out. But the idea that you could just suck money out of public services and not expect the public to suffer is arguably the most pie-in-the-sky thing that has happened to us, the second most pie-in-the-sky thing that has happened to this country in the last 50 years. The most pie-in-the-sky thing, of course, being the idea that leaving the biggest single market on the planet would somehow be good for the economy or the country at large, or, of course, you. So, what's it like? Why are things so bad? And then, I don't know how it will work. What are you going to do? They'll just declare bankruptcy, won't they, these companies or individuals? They say, I can't afford this, I can't afford that. You can fine me all you want. I don't know. Maybe you do. Hit the numbers now. You will get through.
This is LBC.
Every try, every tackle, every thunderous roar, live. Be there as the England rugby team take on Australia, Fiji, New Zealand and Argentina at Allianz Stadium in the Quilter Nations Series. Witness the likes of Maro Itoje, Marcus Smith and Tom Curry every weekend in November. Tickets are selling fast with prices from £50 for adults and £15 for juniors. Visit englandrugby.com/tickets.
The big paint event is now on at Wickes. Save on Dulux Standard 2.5 litre coloured emulsion was £23, now £16. Shop now. Terms apply.
Save £788 on the epic Samsung Galaxy S25 on EE. Talk it out live with Gemini. Just point your camera and ask away.
Like how to make this pie vegan?
You betcha.
Or what colour paint will match my sofa?
In an instant.
Too easy.
Plus you'll get stay connected data because powerful AI deserves the UK's best network. Offer ends 24th November.
Savings across contract and device. Terms and credit check apply. Credit by EE Limited. Verify best network at ee.co.uk/claims.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours? So, we went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 9 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK. Until 25th of November from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It's impunity, isn't it? Impunity is the word that boils our blood the most. The idea that we can see people doing wrong and they don't get affected by it at all. There's an almost delicious irony of Nick this morning inviting Michael, now Lord Gove, to come onto the programme to talk about social landlords who have previously acted with impunity. I'd love to ask him a few questions about things that happened on his watch, but didn't prevent him from becoming an actual lord. Although, to be fair to Michael Gove, compared to Chris Grayling, it's an absolutely reasonable elevation. Chris Grayling, Baron Grayling to you. I wish I'd never looked it up. Michael's in Kilburn. Back to landlords. Michael, what can you tell us?
Hi, James.
Hello, mate.
So it's not really a call I wanted to make and speak to you first time, but I've just had a saga that's been going on for decades, really, a couple of decades. I moved into my social landlord place because of domestic violence and the impact on my mental health.
Yes.
And it's destroyed my mental health numerous times. I've lost my career over it, and I've just come through having the black mold in my bathroom fixed up, but that took months to chase up, and I've had 3 occurrences in the last 18.
How many years have you been in the property?
Since the year 2000.
When did you first report a problem?
2010, I had pipes leaking outside, walls ripped out, rising damp.
What happens when you ring them?
I get fobbed off. I have to chase. I chase up. I make complaints. I've involved my MP before. I've gone to court before. Housing ombudsman are the only people they actually listen to finally, but that can take months.
I guess what confuses me, and it shouldn't, is that if it were a private landlord seeing pound signs instead of people, then you'd be able to make sense of it. But presumably, you would expect better from a social landlord. You'd presume that the system was different.
That's part of their remit. You know, a certain chunk of us are given properties because we are vulnerable. And I should have been on the vulnerable list years ago because I left my career. I had to retire due to ill mental health. I moved in. I got my degree. I got my postgraduate degree. I had no qualifications prior to that. I became a mental health occupational therapist for several years. I had sewage coming through. I had just a tiny 1-inch patch of mold, I think. It took 5 months for them to address that. So then that spread everywhere. They decanted me to a hotel. They ripped everything up, replaced it. And I think the worst part is just it's so unnecessary because last May there was just a dripping tap and it took me 6 weeks to fix that. And that caused the mold and damp to come and recur. They fixed it once, but they used wrong materials. So the rising damp came back in my living room. They fixed it again, and it came back for the third time. I had to increase my medication. Sorry.
I mean, it may not sound like it, but I can't say you're one of the lucky ones, but I mean, there are people getting in touch with me already who can't see their landlord for love or money. You've had them in and out quite a lot, albeit with unconscionable delays and not the highest levels of competence, but they are turning up, I suppose.
I'm talking about calling them 2-3 times a week.
And that's what you have to do.
And that's
the toll it takes on your mental health, is that it's never not in your mind. And for the few moments where it is, it just comes around and smacks you around the back of the head again when you remember what you're living with, right?
Yeah, it's just cumulative. It's just... Because every time you just know that this impunity of, we'll just ignore you. Maybe you'll just go away. And I've had to, you know, I've had friends and family, and I've had my MP, I've had the housing ombudsman several times just intervene, chase.
And this is a relatively common experience, albeit perhaps an extreme one. How are things at the moment? How are things right now?
Well, because I increased my anxiety medication twice, because I'm bipolar, so, you know, 20% of bipolar people... No, I won't mention anything, their names or anything. I'm just saying that 20% of bipolar people die by their own hand. And it's just unconscionable, really, because they just keep repeating the same mistakes. It's always a tiny thing that takes weeks, months to chase up, that becomes massive. And it makes no sense to me because they end up spending so much money fixing.
It's always the way. I know it sounds very trivial compared to what you've just told us, Michael. And I mean, do take care, please. I always think of leaves. It's that time of year now when the pavements in some parts of town are really skiddy, and someone will go over, and it'll end up costing a fortune to provide them with compensation, and it would cost less, I'm sure, in the great scheme of things, to just clean up the leaves like that. Just I'm using a glib example, a really simplistic example of how not doing something quickly because of costs ends up costing way more than it would have done if you'd done something quickly. I always like to give you the Samaritan's number when people reference suicide, as Michael just did. 116 123 is the number that you need 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if you are affected by any of the issues that we're touching upon. And that's it. That's the thing, I think, that he's just articulated in a way that I didn't manage to. Is it's the one place where you can close the door and shut out the world. But what if you can't? What if that sanctuary, security, I don't know what word you prefer, but that sense, you get it sometimes. I mean, the closest you get to it if you're middle class is probably ending up with a housemate that you hate. So you just, or having to stay living with an ex after the relationship has broken down, which is the emotional equivalent of just not being able to retreat. And it's your home. There's mold on the wall. There's water coming through the... I hate it. Arguably more than almost anything else. I don't know why, because I've never been affected by it, but it drives me absolutely potty, this. And the people responsible are the worst of the worst. And that doesn't matter whether it is private landlords seeing pound signs where the rest of us see people, or some of the people working in the social. And you can tell me why I'm wrong on this, on the usual number, 03456060973, or Jobsworths in the social housing sector, who just don't do enough, quickly enough, for enough. Ian's in Southend-on-Sea. Ian, what would you like to say?
Good afternoon, James.
Hello, mate.
Thank you for all your work that you do for us and keeping us sane. I'll just try to keep it brief. Been in social housing for about 22 years with the same housing association.
Yeah.
And they've also retained the same maintenance company. Over the period of time that we've lived here, we've, you know, had faults reported them. But when they send someone out, like, for example, I'll try to keep it to the mould.
Yeah.
We have mould in our bathroom, which is created by a hole in the roof.
Yeah.
So if we could get rid of the hole in the roof, we wouldn't have the, you know, the collapsing ceiling and the mould. But when you call to report it, the last time someone came around to look at it, they sent someone with a sponge and some anti-mould wipe spray stuff, and we reported a hole in the roof, but they haven't even looked at it. So, you know, we've basically just got to report a leaky roof.
I've used up my Kafka-esque quote for the day already, Ian, but that is like something out of a piece of surreal art, isn't it?
I'm here to fix, hello,
I believe you reported a hole in the roof. Yes, that's correct. why have you come with a sponge and some Robert Dias mould removal spray?
It's not sufficient. The work people that they send out aren't always right for the job, you know, for argument's sake. If our boiler goes and we call in and we explain we have no hot water.
How long for?
Because we've got children, they do respond quite quickly.
Yeah.
But it's still quite, you know, complicated for them. They don't stick to the maintenance companies that they use because they're overworked, so they subcontract it to someone else.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So,
what's the biggest thing you've got at the moment? The mould.
I don't know. I mean, you know, since we've lived here, you can decorate as much as you like, but once
if the wall underneath is wet, there's no point.
Yeah,
whether it's paint
pretty
or paper.
You know, and we're not responsible for the building. So we'll, you know, it's their job.
You mean structural?
You know, to maintain
the fitness
of the building.
You can't be doing structural work.
Maybe no, exactly. And there's, you know, we've got in our back room, we've got mould. Because basically they've put in double glazing windows, but they've left the wooden framework for the door,
right.
So it doesn't fit. So there's a constant draft. We can't close the windows because they're buckled.
Oh,
so we can't maintain the temperature. The boilers don't work properly because the radiator's got an air block, and it just adds up and adds up. And they keep on sending the wrong people for the right job, and you just get nowhere. You know.
What do you worry about most?
My kids, really.
Healthy at the moment? Because the mould is a worry. I don't want to add to your burdens. I worry about the mould.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, we keep them away from, you know, the worst.
I think it's like pollen. I know that sounds odd.
Yeah.
But you know how some people can, their nose explodes at the first sniff of a certain type of pollen. And other people can swim in it and they'll be absolutely fine. I think mould is like pollen, and that for some kids it could be catastrophic, but not hopefully for yours.
Yeah, so, you know, as the attitude to go, you know, it's okay for one, so it's okay for all, isn't it?
Well, that's, I mean, that is the problem. So you should have no mould in any homes, and it's only when you get the cases that are extreme, like this little lad Awab's, that the rest of the world sits up and takes notice. I don't enjoy these phone-ins, Ian, because I want to end the call by somehow being able to help you or by being able to offer up some sort of encouragement or hope, but that's why we have to have the conversations, because there ain't any, and it must be absolutely awful. Do you know, the other topic I was looking at was Wes Streeting's comments about a sense of despair in the country and the fact that the word most used by British people to describe Britain at the moment is broken. And the last hour about the state of prisons and this hour about the state of social housing kind of answered the question for me, haven't they? They're both relevant to that. They both absolutely fit into that category. It's 12:31. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
The housing secretary says a new law compelling social housing landlords to fix damp and mould issues quickly should extend to the private sector. Awab's law is named after a two-year-old boy who died as a result of mould exposure. LBC has seen figures which reveal hundreds of homeless young people looking for help are being turned away by councils. Centrepoint says it's received 450 calls in the last year from people who have been denied support, despite local authorities in England being legally obliged to offer it. And a cabinet minister says the justice system needs to be rebuilt from the bottom up following the release of Hadush Kabatu. The migrant, who was serving a 12-month jail sentence for sexual assault, was freed from HMP Chelmsford by mistake on Friday. LBC weather turning gradually cloudy across the west, rain moving into Northern Ireland and later Western Scotland and parts of the southwest, dry with sunny spells to the east, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay? But I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new, tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Intervention from Wes Streeting, who I do think, and I don't say this as a criticism, it's politics or showbiz. I think he's got his eye on the big job at some point, and it may come sooner rather than later. I don't think that's an unhelpful or controversial thing to say. And if it's going to come sooner, then the responsibility for that acceleration would probably lie more with Keir Starmer than it did with Wes Streeting, who is by no means a shoe-in to get the gig. But he's a smart operator, and the comments that he's made about the need for optimism, you can chalk some of it up to communications problems, you can chalk some of it up to an incredibly hostile media, and you can chalk some of it up to a very, very unimpressive opening innings, if you like. But they have hit some nice shots that we generally don't hear much about. And, of course, they are dealing with the consequences of the last lot being absolutely awful and getting their toes tickled and their tummies rubbed by almost everybody in the media for the best part of 14 years. I wish, talking about impunity, getting cross with landlords today, imagine being one of the journalists that wrote about how brilliant Liz Truss was. And then in the time it takes for a lettuce to rot, the reality has emerged. I don't think a single one of them has faced any sanction or professional setback, despite being so obviously rubbish at what they do. It's breathtaking. And I saw somebody else pointing out at the weekend that the Daily Telegraph has stopped printing unhinged headlines, which is so, I think, really selfish of them. Don't you? We had so much fun reading out headlines that sounded as if they'd been written by a chat GPT bot on a curious cocktail of LSD and poison. And, I mean, almost at some points we'd get one a day. We'd sometimes get more than one a day. We couldn't pick from it. We have not seen one for weeks now, if not months. And a chap who worked even harder than I did to bring them to your attention, albeit that he did it on social media rather than an enormous radio show, he has now, I noted at the weekend, he has now registered the fact that this can't be a coincidence. They've stolen our fun. They've spoiled our fun. Whoever it was who was stealing a living as the comment editor of the Daily Telegraph has either moved on or been told to stop providing so much ammunition to people who think we're all idiots, because the unhinged headline appears to have died a death. So I don't know whether we're going to kill the feature off or whether we're going to have to start casting our net a little wider, going back to some of the Daily Mail columns. But I mean, really, do I have to? We should have to wait and see. But it used to be the case that you could just open up the Daily Telegraph and you had about an 80% chance of finding an unhinged headline before you even got to the fold. But on we go. These are the burdens I bear on your behalf. Missing Word Round, happily, is obviously still up and running. I've got a problem with this week's with today's Missing Word Round, and I don't know which word to miss out. And I can't ask you, because that would involve telling you both words that I'm thinking of missing out once. I'm just going to, with your permission, I'm just going to consult with my colleagues. Which word do you think I should miss out? And don't say it too loudly, because it will bleed out of the earphones into the microphone. The second one. Yeah? Not yet. No, because then they'll know the missing word. If I hold the headline up, they'll know the... I am not the... I'm not going to say the whole thing. I'm saying blank, blank, but I only want to put one blank in there. I think it works better. I am not the blank, blank, insists would-be Dutch MP. But I need one word in there. So what word should I leave in? Word one or word two? Can I have some input? Word, you said word two a minute ago. Oh, no, leave in word. Blank the second word. Blank the first word. So you're disagreeing with each other. Oh, this is ridiculous. No wonder I make all the decisions on my own without consulting anybody normally. I am not. I am. Oh, I can't decide now. Thank you, Keith. Talk among yourselves. No, I'm going to blank the first word. I am. Thank you. It's enough of the music. I am not the blank streaker, insists would-be Dutch MP. I am not the blank streaker, insists would-be Dutch MP. What is the missing word? 12:39. A little light relief in the middle of an extremely unlight or serious topic, namely about social landlords being forced to fix emergencies in 24 hours. I'm not sure we'll get onto the question of whether or not what is being announced today is fit for purpose, because we're too busy looking at why it is so urgent and so necessary. Jack's in Margate. Down to Margate. Jack, what made you pick up the phone?
Hello, James. How are you?
Very well, mate. What's going on?
Good. So, I know you asked not for landlords to ring up. However, I do work for a social housing landlord, but I look at this from a different perspective.
No. The only landlord... No, I don't want landlords ringing in to say, I'm nothing like the ones you're talking about. You're not doing that.
No.
That's fine, then.
No. So, my point of view from this is, as working for a social housing landlord, is that tenants are not listened to in terms of, you know, the experiences that they're having inside these properties.
Yeah.
My previous employer, who was also a social housing landlord, I walked into a young family's flat and I witnessed mushrooms growing on the walls inside this property.
Shut up.
No, genuinely. And I was in total and utter disbelief when I saw this. I've got a young family myself, and, you know, I wouldn't live in that, and I don't blame them for not wanting to live in that whatsoever. And what grates my gears more than anything is when you've got these landlords who say, oh, it's because you're drying your washing. Oh, it's because, you know, you're not airing out your
property. But that's
not always the case.
Reputational protection everywhere you go, the first pushback from the people who will have to pay money to fix something will be, oh no, we don't have to pay money, and they'll reach for something. And there will be some examples of people blocking up the air vents because the draft is coming through and that increasing the damp. But I mean, you're not going to get mushrooms as a consequence of drying your undies in the sitting room.
No, absolutely not. And the result of this was, it turned out that there was issues in the loft in the block of flats, but it took them months to get to a point when they stuck a birdcage or scaffolding around the block of flats and then got contractors to go in, and they walked in and went, oh my God, okay, here's the problem. Mm. But it shouldn't have got that far in the first place.
So the loft was dripping wet?
Yeah, the loft, and she wasn't the only flat that was affected. There was other flats, obviously it was a block, but, you know, it was the issue inside the loft, which is why I'm so thankful that now AWAB's law has been introduced, and the unfortunate situation that poor little AWAB had to, you know, live in these conditions and then pass away as a result of them.
Mm.
But it just holds, social housing landlords to such a higher account.
Will
now,
it work?
Which they should have been done in the first place.
Will it work, do you think? I mean, it only has to improve things. It can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, but I'll run through the big things and you give me a quick rundown individually on how effective you think one will be. So landlords will now be compelled to fix emergency health and safety hazards within 24 hours of reporting.
Yeah, and again, a lot of it can be situational issues. So, for example, you've got the decent home standard, which is, you know, I imagine that's what that will fall under.
Yeah.
One of them would be like not having a banister on your stairs.
Okay.
So we have to come out and repair that within 24 hours because it's a health and safety problem.
Yeah.
So, yes, you know, I think that is going to be realistic, but it's going to be difficult to achieve because there are loads of different things within that decent home standard that, you know...
And of course, one day there might be 100 people that ring up, and another day there might be 5, and the system has to accommodate both of them. But, okay, investigate significant damp and mould within 10 working days of being notified, including mushrooms.
In my particular situation with the social housing landlord that I work for, that will happen.
Good.
Because we've now introduced a specific damp and mould disrepair team. So we have damp and mould specialists now who, I think there are, you know, a handful of them, but who cover our entire stock. They are reactive, so they go out to report as boots on the ground role that I'm in. If we identify it, we need to report it straight away, you know, the same day we identify it. And then that goes over to that team. They review the referral, and then they make an appointment to go out and see the tenant and then look at the condition of the property.
It's making me think of the prisons phoning in the last hour. Is that none of this is rocket science, is it? It should be relatively straightforward. And I think you've answered the next one within your answer to the last one. Make property safe within 5 working days after inspection and write with the findings to tenants within 3 working days of inspection completing. So it's achievable with the right support and funding.
Absolutely. I mean,
how often have you come across people in your line of work who are to blame for some of this? And not because they're straitjacketed or hidebound or we haven't got the bodies or we haven't got the money, but people who just don't give in, because you obviously care. I salute you for that. I really do. And for going into this line of work and you display, I can hear enthusiasm and passion for your work in your voice. How often do you come across people who have neither? Either because it's beaten out of them or because they never had it in the first place?
I think people get to a point where they just think, why should I bother?
Mm.
Because they just get the same answer time and time again. Oh, it's because you're not airing out your property. Oh, it's because you're not putting your heating on. Oh, it's because you're drying your washing, that sort of stuff. Yes, there is an element of that. There are going to be people who are causing the issue.
No, but how often do people on your side of the fence deserve a bit of a rocket, a bit of a kick up the backside?
I would say probably at least 60 to 70% of the time, because they're just not being listened to.
No, you're not listening to me. I mean, the people who do what you do, how many of them are not fit for purpose?
Our tenants are not being listened to. But people on my side of the fence, yeah, 60-70% of the time, you know, people who work within social housing need a rocket up.
They could do more.
They absolutely could do more, yeah, without a doubt.
That's not what I wanted to hear, but in a way, it offers up hope that these measures will be even more effective because it means there is so much room for improvement that this could bring the improvement about. Jack, lovely stuff, mate. Thank you for that. 12:45 is the time. I've forgotten which word I missed out now. Which word did I miss out? The first one. I can't give the answer now. The first time I did it, I read out the first. Okay. I am not the blank streaker, insists would-be Dutch MP. I'll hopefully remember to tell you the answer to that after this.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
A high-profile prisoner mistakenly released and recaptured, but police and politicians have been left exposed. Can they keep you safe?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay? But I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
Trains are three bridges for two adults, one skeleton and one fairy werewolf, as you do.
Just one pumpkin each, kids. Charlie, not that one, mate. It's nearly as big as you.
Back on the train with two little monsters and a couple of pumpkins. Now off home to spend a good 3 hours carving. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
Welcome our new bookworms to the club. Now, do you read traditional books or e-books?
Oh, real books.
Traditional, always.
Yeah, quite.
I read e-books. Yes. I adjust it so the font's huge.
Ooh, they make large font books.
Think bigger. Imagine Moby Dick all cuddled up with a book. His font size.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
Maybe it's time for varifocals. At Specsavers, get 2-for-1 varifocal glasses from £110. Conditions and exclusions apply. See online for details.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
12:48 is the time. Vegan. Which word would you have dropped? So here's the headline. I am not the vegan streaker, insists would-be Dutch MP. It's an extraordinary story of an election candidate being hauled out of a live televised debate because someone had reported him as being another character entirely who is well known for sort of ambushing things like other television programmes in his underpants with vegan slogans daubed across his chest. Which word would have worked? I think I made the right choice. What's better? Listen to this, okay? I am not the vegan blank, insists would-be Dutch MP. I am not the vegan blank, insists would-be Dutch MP. Or, I am not the blank streaker, insists would-be Dutch MP. I am not the blank streaker, insists would-be Dutch MP. No, it's not a new game. I just like everyone to be involved in the programme. Or, which I don't think would have worked, I am not the blank blank, insists would-be Dutch MP. Because everyone would have just said Messiah, wouldn't they? So I think we got it correct. I am not the vegan. was the missing word. Streeka insists would be Dutch MP. God, blimey, I almost go back on panel shows if I thought there was a risk of a fellow panellist being carted off by police in the middle of live proceedings. 10 to 1 is the time. Back to social housing and just hideousness after hideousness after hideousness with, thanks to the last caller, Jack, I think a little glimmer of optimism that this might actually work. And this, of course, is what the government need to be doing. You can't reach the voters who want other people to be hurt. It's not the job of the Labour movement. It's not the job of a Labour government. You will never reach the voters who derive their pleasure from promises to hurt other people, whether it's immigrants or the kind of people that Sarah Potchin is mad when she sees on television, i.e. brown people or black people. You can't reach the voters whose only real hope in life is to see people that aren't them get hurt. So you just have to do something different. And this might be a good example of what that looks like. But God knows there's a lot of room for improvement. Steve's in Thirsk. Steve, what would you like to say?
Oh, I wish I was optimistic.
Oh, dear. Along here and start raining on my chips.
Sorry. I mean, my story, I was a leaseholder and my freeholder was a social housing association.
Yes.
So I had an issue on the outside of my property and it was affecting the inside. Effectively, there was no mortar between the bricks. So,
yeah, well, I mean, I only spent 2 weeks on a building site in Doncaster in 1988, but that sounds like a problem.
Yeah, it wasn't great. And so I got a bit ticked off and ended up starting a kind of online group for this, talking with other tenants.
Yeah.
And some of the horror stories, I mean, mine was irritating, and, you know, but I wasn't, at risk. Some of these sort of horror stories I got through from this group were horrendous, with pictures, videos and all.
Mm.
This is a sort of minor one, was people literally had water gushing through the ceiling any time it rained, to that extent. And the worst one was that there was literal rising damp, black mould. You know,
yes.
Again, what that person says irritating about just opening the windows. You're like, this is a thick black coat all the way about sort of foot high all the way around the bottom. And the tragic thing about that one was that it was a woman who contacted me. It was her husband who was terminally ill, dying of respiratory cancer this place.
Oh, no.
And, she was actually in the process of taking them to court. But this had been going on for years.
And what was the common experience when you contacted the owner?
They don't care. They always bang on about their procedures, which always irritates me. It says, well, it's our procedures to do this. It's our procedures. I said, I don't care about your procedure. Your procedures don't work. Things like they say they do inspections. And you just say, well, you clearly didn't do an inspection on these people's houses or mine, because you would have seen these obvious things that, you know, like no bricks in the mortar.
The bricks. Sorry to be pedantic. No bricks in the mortar would arguably be an even bigger problem.
But just the sheer nonsense of it all.
So it's all about kicking the can, isn't it? There's an acknowledgement that we'll probably have to do something at some point, but let's try and postpone it for as long as we possibly can. And that's an optimistic reading of the situation, by which point, whatever it is they're going to do, is going to cost a hell of a lot more than it would have done if they'd done it in the first place.
Well, what baffles me more, what irritates me more, is that this social housing company, they bang on about their charitable nature, and they're doing it for the good of society, yet I'm pretty sure they use these dilapidated housing stocks are what fund their future builds, because they're building as well, and they build these other houses, which are amazing, and sell them. So, and it infuriates me when they post record profits. You know, like, you haven't even fixed your own housing stock, and I wonder whether these loans that they're borrowing this money from on this housing stock is even worth it.
It may not even be that sinister. They just don't care. Why are you not optimistic, given that there's so much room for improvement? A little bit of pressure can't make anything worse and would probably make things better.
But the stock is so bad in some of these cases. Like, some of these properties couldn't be fixed within 10 days. It's almost, you know, not worth saying that. Some of them will take months to fix.
I sound like Vicky Pollard. There's different things. I mean, the things that can be fixed in 24 hours will have to be fixed within 24 hours. Some of it will... I mean, it's got to get better, Steve, hasn't it?
I really hope so.
Yeah, I do too.
The sort of vaguely humorous note to end on with my situation was
Go
that
on.
We had to, as a leaseholder, you have to contribute pay for some of this work, which was annoying because I thought they would have put money in the sinking fund for the work on mine.
Yes.
We were planning to sell, which is why we wanted to get all this work done so it wouldn't take money off my off the flat. We put aside, it was about three or four grand for this repair.
Yeah.
You can't pass that on to the new buyer. This company was so incompetent that they totally forgot to ask me for the money. I sold it and it hasn't been passed on to the new person. So therefore, $3,000 or $4,000 out of pocket because they're so bad.
Well, that's nice for you. I mean, again, it is that one of our favourite tensions between cock-up and conspiracy, or incompetence versus corruption. In this case, clearly incompetence. I'm still not 100% sure on what it was in the last hour with the fellow who escaped from prison, the sex offender, the grisly pervert who escaped from prison and, who was let out of prison early and wanted to get back in, the literal opposite of escaping from prison. But I think everybody who knew what they were talking about was probably leaning more into the idea of it being incompetence rather than it being conspiracy. And the same sounds true of Steve's. Not many people could knit a conversation about mould and social housing into a conversation about a prisoner who was released early and incorrectly and wasn't let back in by the authorities despite being desperate to get back in. But that's why you tune in every day. Thank you, Steve. Callum is in Preston. Callum, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, Steve. Good afternoon. James, sorry.
That's all right. Call me whatever you want, as long as it's decent.
Yeah, I was in a similar situation to quite a few. I was in a social housing association that was riddled with damp and mould.
What was it like when you moved in?
Listen, it was like palace when I moved in.
Yeah,
it was all painted, decorated. You didn't want for anything. Everything was bought for you, including like down to a knife and fork.
And how quickly did it start fraying at the edges?
Within 12 weeks. Within 12 weeks, the mould and damp started coming through.
So they just painted over it?
Yeah. I went from a flat. It was a scum landlord flat. It was meant to be a step up into supported housing, which was the Housing Association. And I went from the frying pan to the fire. I started off with severe emphysema and asthma, and I'm now stage 4 cancer. 2 years later, after threatening them with solicitors and so on and so on, and now I had to move out of that house, forced to move out of it, and I'm now living in one room in Blackpool. I'm 58. And I'm moving again.
It's no life.
I've been listening to and thinking about what people have been saying whilst waiting to talk to you. And you know, two things spring to mind. Why is he a go to jail square on a monopoly board? Why is that square on a monopoly board? Because fraud is endemic, it always has been.
There should be a threshold beyond which the full weight of the law comes down on you. I hear you.
Yeah, it's not going to change, James. Everything's a knee-jerk reaction by governments, and it's top-down. And if it's a knee-jerk reaction, then somebody's going to pick a loophole for it, which is what they will do.
I hope you're wrong, but I suspect you might be right. I'm going to have to cling to a little bit of optimism, Callum. You'll let me do that, because the alternative is to... It's to throw your hands up in the air, but I wish you the very best, mate. I really do. I'm sorry for what you're going through. No one deserves that.
And it has been...
Well, yeah, you say that. It shouldn't be. We've got to cling to that hope. Otherwise, as I say, we just might as well all go home. And to that end, if you are suffering from some of the issues that we've been talking about today, then Gary, who I can vouch for as one of the finest decorators in the West, there is a paint that's anti-mould resistant. Quite how effective it is against... And I know he's used this himself, because I follow him on social media. It's very, very soothing watching some of the work that he's done. Zinsser, it's called. Zinsser. Perma white paint is very anti-mould, very mould resistant. But, of course, in some cases, if the wall behind the paint is sopping wet, then I'm not sure anything can do much in the circumstances. But that's about the best on the market. That's it for me for another day. If you missed any of it, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or on the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions. Put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily and Full Disclosure, starring Charles Dance this week, one of the most delightful guests I've ever had. So download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, back from his holidays. Sheila Fogarty is with you now.
Thanks very much, James. At 3 today, the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, isn't holding back. He says people still feel hopeless and don't think politics will help them. If he's right, what can they do to change your mind? At two, still with Wes Streeting, he said this about Reform MP Sarah Putchin's remarks about racial representation in ads.
What she said was a total disgrace. There is no explanation for what she said other than her words were racist.
Is he right? Nigel Farage will speak at two. We'll hear what he's got to say. But first up after the news, extra checks will happen in prisons and during release after you-know-what, Hadush Kabatu's rearrest. David Lammy's statement comes at 3:30. Do you trust the police and the prisons, the justice system essentially, to even keep you safe?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Housing Secretary says he'd like to see a new law on damp and mould issues in social housing being extended to private tenants. People in England are now protected by AWAB's law, requiring landlords to fix issues quickly. It's named after a two-year-old boy who died as a result of mould exposure. Christian Weaver is the barrister who represented the family of AWAB Ishak. He's told LBC he hopes this makes a marked difference.
In Akshay Wab's case, the home was deemed as unfit for human habitation. How have we as a society gotten to a place where members of our society can be living in homes that are unfit for human habitation and their landlord knows? So yes, it's brilliant that a Wab's law, or phase one of it, is now in place. And we hope this can really mark a change in the culture that exists as well when it comes to renting in this country and the tenant-landlord relationship.
Figures seen by LBC reveal hundreds of young people who are facing homelessness are being turned away by councils. But Centrepoint says it received more than 8 calls a week last year from residents who are being denied help. The local government association says councils are committed to meeting their legal duties. Prisons in England and Wales are to introduce stronger checks before prisoners are released. It follows the mistaken release of sex offender Hadush Kabatu, who is now expected to be deported this week. He was arrested in North London yesterday morning after a two-day search. His Majesty's Chief Inspector of Prisons is Charlie Taylor.
It doesn't help that this has been a part of government that seems to have been a revolving door for many, many years. And it does mean that ministers often are not there long enough to be able to get the level of grip that they need in an incredibly complex department.
A man accused of driving into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League victory parade has appeared in court. 53-year-old Paul Doyle is due to face trial next month after denying dangerous driving as well as a series of other offences. The allegations relate to 29 people aged between 6 months and 77 years old. And the King is unveiling the UK's first Armed Forces Memorial for LGBT people. It's designed to honour those currently serving and commemorate veterans affected by the pre-2000 ban on gay personnel. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 12 points at 96.58. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather turning gradually cloudy across the west. Rain moving into Northern Ireland and later Western Scotland and parts of the southwest. Dry with sunny spells to the east, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
There's always a lot going on. I'm on site getting the job done, running the business too, payments, invoices, admin, all on me. But now with Tap to Pay, I can take payments there and then, and Sage sorts the admin afterwards. Everything's sorted in the background so I don't spend hours doing it later. Magic.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping British businesses like Mike at Residual Electrical Contractors. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Well, the news broke about Hadush Kabatu's mistaken release just after I'd finished working for the week, in fact, and I couldn't quite believe my eyes when I saw the story just a few hours into the weekend. His mistaken release from HMP Chelmsford on Friday, which more of details on that in a moment, led to that weekend manhunt and his eventual arrest in London yesterday. And we learned today that extra checks will be carried out in prisons across England and Wales. Well, you would hope so, wouldn't you, from today. after the sex offender was released in error at the tail end of last week. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, will be in Parliament later. You can hear that here on LBC. Let's get a sense from Shivani Sharma, first of all, LBC's East of England reporter, of how this story unfolded. And the reason we're talking to you about it, Shivani, is you've covered this right from the very beginning, and the Bell Hotel in Epping, which is where this all relates to originally.
Yeah, exactly. It relates to the incident that happened in Epping when Hadish Kabati was convicted of sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl and a woman. And he was convicted just over a month ago at Chelmsford Magistrates Court. He was sentenced to 12 months in prison. And just 1 month after all of that happened, it's, as you say, almost unbelievable. He suddenly accidentally released from prison. He was supposed to be deported. And on Friday morning, he was accidentally released from Chelmsford prison. He was meant to be going, we're told, to the Immigration Detention Centre. And somewhere along the line, he was accidentally freed. And he was spotted that day and caught on camera by members of the public in the Chelmsford area. He was still wearing his grey tracksuit from prison. He was carrying a bag, a plastic bag with his belongings, which presumably he'd taken straight from the prison. And even almost more unbelievably, he apparently tried to go back into the prison four or five times. He looked genuinely confused in some of these videos, and he was rejected. He was kind of extremely confused, eventually ended up boarding.
I mean, it's not funny, but it's almost Keystone Cops funny, isn't it?
You honestly can't make it up. And then he was eventually given directions to go to the train station. He got on the train to London. And he was in London by about lunchtime on Friday. He was spotted multiple times across the weekend in Dalston in East London. And then he was eventually spotted by a member of the public who was walking their dog in Finsbury Park. And he was rearrested shortly after that on Sunday morning. So this was nearly 48 hours. And he changed his clothes by this point. But the father of the 14-year-old girl who Kabati assaulted in the summer has said that this whole ordeal has caused her an immense amount of stress and anxiety.
I am completely broken that the man who sexually assaulted my 14-year-old daughter was accidentally released from prison onto the streets again. The trauma and torment my daughter has suffered since this assault has really hurt myself and my family. Friday's news has caused her so much stress and anxiety. She feared seeing him again in the high road and him recognising her. Myself and my family feel massively let down and infuriated by HMP Chelmsford, the police, the justice system and our Labour government.
Now, David Lammy, the Justice Secretary, says that Hadish Kabati will be deported this week. As you say, we're going to be hearing more from him later. But he's announced that there will be a national inquiry into what happened.
This was totally unacceptable. I will be making a statement in Parliament. There will be a further and full investigation into how this happened. On behalf of the public, I want to be reassured that it won't continue to happen and that the systems that we put in place, the checks and balances, are there to reassure the public.
Now, David Lammy has also already announced, as you mentioned, the government is introducing new mandatory checks on prisoners before their release. Now, this could be as much as 30 extra checks on prisoners, which could take 45 extra minutes. And yes, this has been a particularly high profile case. But if you look at the figures, 262 prisoners in England and Wales were released by mistake between April 2024 and 2025. That's more than double what it was the year before. And Sheila, the National Security Secretary to the Justice and Custodial Sector from the Community Trade Union, Gavin Miller, has said how he thinks this inquiry should be conducted.
I think there needs to be a round table with providers, with prison operators, with HMPPS, with Ministry of Justice, and actually with the workers who work on the floor. Because it's great putting in strategies and putting in ideas to fix issues, but what you've got to then listen to is the people who are operating that day to day.
Now, as you'd expect, there's been reaction across the political spectrum. Reform UK's Nigel Farage has said this is evidence that Britain is broken. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has said the entire system is collapsing under Labour. And no doubt there'll be pressure on the government this afternoon.